And gentlemen, today, Tuesday, May 11th, we are going to convene a subcommittee of the Senate for the purposes of taking testimony on House Bill 5023. It's my impression that the House members are in caucus. When they are available, we will reconvene as the full subcommittee for Ways and Means for Natural Resources. We've been in the process over the past couple of days of hearing House Bill 5023, which is the budget for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have as our guest today Mr. Jim Greer, who's the director of the department, and normally he would be available in the room to hear the testimony and be available for any questions that the subcommittee might have. We've invited him to join us here at the rostrum so that if there are any questions that arise from public testimony, he'll be conveniently located and be able to answer. In the meantime, we have taken a couple of pages of folks that have signed up for witness testimony, and I imagine there will be more pages before we're finished. In keeping with our traditions, if a member of the Legislative Assembly appears here, we'll move them to the top of the witness list. Since they're here to do the people's business, and they either will be missing another committee meeting or they will be absent from their other duties so they can give testimony. Otherwise, we will start not necessarily in the order in which these folks have signed up, but we'll ask the folks that have traveled the longest distance, to testify first. In keeping with that, I see that Mr. Steve Hammond is here, and he has come from Harney County, representing the Harney County Cattlemen and the Harney County Farm Bureau. So if Mr. Hammond is here, could you step forward? And the protocol is if you have documentation you'd like to leave, give it to the staff person or the clerk, and he will make sure that's distributed. When you come to the witness podium, simply state your name for the record when you begin your testimony. So, Mr. Hammond, if you would, please.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Hammond, Harney County.
And proceed when you're ready, Mr. Hammond.
This testimony was actually prepared for Senate Bill 1234. Apologize that I haven't got the titles changed. I'm speaking on behalf of the Harney County Stock Growers, the Harney County Farm Bureau, and the Harney County Cattle Women Legislative Committee and Hammond Ranches, Inc. In relation to the legislative actions with common interest to consider, the 1997 Legislative Assembly Senate Bill 1002, Oregon Agricultural Statistics Service study done in the interim wildlife damage survey indicated $158 million worth of loss to Oregon's agriculture. The 1997 Legislative House Bill 3387 directed ODF&W to allocate one half the amount of the non-resident tags for deer and elk hunting to certified registered outfitters and guides for use by their clients. This legislation put the landowner's tag sale incentive in direct conflict and competition with an entity that had no basic investment in wildlife, thus discounting the value of the tags originally issued to the landowners. Annually, numerous requests of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and state legislature have been made as a result of wildlife damage to private property throughout the state. A request is being made for economic incentive and compensation for unlimited free-roaming wildlife concentrated on private property. At the direction of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife are wildlife management objectives, predator control programs, habitat damage or habitat use assessment, annual wildlife counts, tag allocation policies and registration regulations, and application deadlines for landowner preference tags. Confusion and opportunities for error resulting in the last-minute tag refusal increase annually. A large portion of the constantly increased hunting and fishing tag license sales are used for the management of the department. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is or should be aware of the proportionate value of private property to the maintenance and production of wildlife of the state, in addition to economic damage to the private landowner.
Mr. Hammond?
Yes.
I'll make sure that every member gets this copy, the written testimony. But could you summarize what it is that you think that the department should be doing that they're not doing now, so that we get some direction from the legislative branch to figure out what we should ask them to change, either in their budget or in their policies?
I apologize. I'm not as familiar with their budget as I maybe should be. I don't know what could be adjusted to take into consideration compensation to the landowners.
Okay.
But if they're doing anything, and they are through the tag allocation system, whatever they're doing, they need to assess a value to it. We know how much we've been damaged through the survey.
$158 million.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's partial. I don't think that's the total. I think that's the stuff that can be documented in terms of animal damage to a farm gate value of crops. But torn down fences and disrupted irrigation equipment and disrupted season of use, I think none of those things actually get rolled up in that value. But.
Yes, but at least at any time that the opportunity is given for the department, or preferably agency that doesn't have an internal conflict, could address a value to any compensation that we're receiving, we would know then what we weren't receiving. I don't know where the happy medium is. That's ODF&W's mere acknowledgement that we need to be compensated would be of some value.
Okay, so once we've established the value of the tag, what other things does the department need to do to improve the landowner relations and
exactly
help you with animal damage control?
Well, when you talk about animal damage control, damage is always a negative. When you start talking about damage, people are at odds. I think we need to be talking about compensation for habitat, even if the wildlife isn't present. But compensation for the habitat or the creation of the habitat or providing it. In order for us to get anywhere, any place, we have to assess what habitat is being used now. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife local biologists aren't out on the ground assessing that. They have the opportunity. They'll say that they go out twice a year and do their annual counts, but that isn't assessing our relationship with the wildlife. They haven't asked for us to assess it in our own words or given us a place to document it.
Mr. Hammond, actually, I guess maybe I'll refer a question to Senator George, since he's one of our land use experts. When we have winter range designated as a wildlife habitat issue, an overlay can be placed on the property, and then development can be prevented on that property if it is designated winter range or designated habitat. And that does have an effect on value. Mr. Hammond, if what you're saying is that we ought to figure out what the value of the potential habitat is and find some way to compensate landowners for providing the habitat, even if it's not related to animal damage control. Is that the basis of your testimony?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Gerd, do we have a document or documentation for the loss of value for land that's designated as winter special habitat management area?
I don't remember if that was included in that $158 million or not. That discussion arose in our committee. I'll have to go back and look at the notes on that. I'm sorry, I can't.
Mr. Greer, when we have a winter range designated as a zoning overlay, does that preclude development in that area, property development?
Mr. Chair, I don't think it precludes it, but it does put some restrictions on the number of residences or how those residents may be clustered on an acreage basis, and that's established by the Goal 5 measures for each county's land use plan.
Okay. So there is some definite connection between the land use pattern related to habitat and the value of the property. Mr. Hammond, I think we could probably do some correlations there. We'll look into that, and I will get back to you about what kind of correlations we could be looking at.
Appreciate that. The department, in relation to that, their shortcoming with any compensation to the private landowner isn't in the wildlife's best interest. If it was our incentive to create wildlife on private land, 78% of our county is owned by the federal government. We can't keep that wildlife on our private property. It's not our intention to keep it on it. It would spill over and benefit the public likewise. Would you like me to finish my testimony?
Absolutely. Summarize and finish, Mr. Hammond.
Don't be bashful to interrupt me. Direct compensation for habitat contribution to damage based on populations does not seem to be a consideration for the agency. Although ODF&W biologists agree, the original landowner preference system has been amended so much that there appears to be no way to simplify it without a complete redo. Recent actions taken to alleviate the problem have added to an agency employee to improve relations or communicate between the department and private property owners and or add another agency administrative program with very costly landowner input or management manipulation. Each of these coming with added budgetary increases for ODF&W, making the problem more intricate. Also among the programs referred to are the Access and Habitat Board, Landowner Preference Tag Program, which has mushroomed into the offering of competitive tags for pet agendas and nonprofit organizational fundraisers. The Green Forage Program, which is responsible for the planting of substantial acreages of yellow star thistle in Wallowa County in 1997. Many of the benefactors of these programs have no direct investment in the habitat or maintenance of wildlife. Without legislative direction, ODF&W has an internal conflict of interest. If they are expected to serve the wildlife, the hunting public, and the agriculture producing public, objectives for success of positive management and can and economically do conflict depending upon the management goal. At least the wildlife counts and evaluation of damage should be assigned to a neutral entity. Specifically, ODF&W needs legislative direction to provide compensation for basic wildlife habitat provided by private property. With foresight into the immediate future, it may not be unreasonable to expect that with the fish listings, budget priorities other than fish will take a lesser priority, further deteriorating the concerns over private property inundated by mammals or birds. The Oregon hunting opportunity has changed dramatically in the past several years. It is a different scenario when the agency is actively marketing out-of-state tags, changing objectives, and furnishing directly or indirectly financial subsidies to nonprofit organizations, etc., through the sales or lotteries or auctions of the Oregon State Wildlife Tags. The agency is creating a new business from the assumption or taking of benefits off private property. Also, cooperative partnerships between private landowners and responsible agencies has always been an obvious preference. With today's scenario in regards to the landowner preference tagging and additional preference tag allocations, as it has played out over the years, the agency leaves private property owners no alternative but to kill the wildlife through the public or private hunting in order to reap an economic consideration. Under this management, with damage hunts or tag allocation incentives, we will have to kill the last deer, elk, or antelope, etc., in order to offset the economic damage, leaving nothing for aesthetics, breeding stock, wildlife viewing, photography, or diversity of other recreational opportunities. A provision should be made for direct economic compensation to the private property, enabling economic return without having to kill wildlife on private property. Under today's scenario, the agency and the landowner are not partners, and because of the agency's portrayal of private property, there is a promotion of conflict between the hunter and the landowner. Legislative direction is needed for economic recognition of the contribution from private property.
Mr. Chair. Question, Representative?
Thank you. I've read this portion several times, and I'm really having a hard time understanding, you know, why we would need to have a policy where we kill the last deer, elk, or antelope. I'm also not seeing ODS&W, you know, trying to, you know, go out and mass market and bring lots of hunters from out of state to come in and hunt. You're saying because there's no cooperation and because there's wildlife damage, you know, to agricultural crops, that and you're relating to the preference hunt, and evidently that's not inadequate. I'm just not getting the picture. So,
Representative, maybe I can help here.
Please do. Thank you.
I've had some discussions in this order before. Landowners are not compensated for animal damage. There's control mechanisms, or there's landowner tag preferences, and the only other mechanism that we have out there is assignment of tags to out-of-state hunters, guides and packers. So I think if I understand the thrust of Mr. Hammond's testimony, is the only direct compensation that comes to landowners is through taking animals. There's no direct compensation to landowners for non-consumptive use, like providing animal habitat. So if I understood what he was saying, the only way that the landowner can reap the benefits of these other programs is through taking of animals.
Go ahead. The populations in our area are becoming more and more dependent on private property. As I said before, we're only 22% private property in our county, and we're the biggest county in Oregon. If those populations continue to be depleted and ever more reliant on private property, say there comes down to be only 5 or 6 deer out in my field, where there's 400 or 500 now. The only way I'm going to see any benefit, if I am of the frame of mind that I don't want those 4 or 5 deer in my field, which I'm not, is to kill them, further depleting the state's wildlife. Do you follow me?
Well, it sounds like I'm hearing that there's a request from, you know, people in your industry to have, you know, zero wildlife impact on, you know, on your crops. And
I don't think that can be accomplished, and we're not requesting ODF&W to get their wildlife off our land by any means. A lot of us enjoy it, but we may enjoy it for different purposes. And the public takes an opportunity to enjoy that, and there's an opportunity for funds to change hands, monetary compensation. We aren't getting any of it. I guess if you want to look at it from the past, maybe we don't deserve any of it, but there's a line being drawn out in the country where we've reached our toleration point as private landowners. The federal agencies aren't managing their property to benefit the wildlife off of private property, so the burden is falling back on the private property person.
Are you saying that the feds are not managing the habitat so the animals, you know, can go there and feed, and so the animals are feeding on private property, and that's causing excess damage on private properties?
Yes. We're doing naturally. I don't know what my time limits are here.
Well, you're getting pretty close to it, Mr. Hammond, so I'll tell you what. I think the issue is very important. One of the things that I'll tell you from my own personal experience is that the federal agencies have stopped doing water impounds They stopped doing thinning so that a lot of the grasses and forbs are not getting the kind of recycling they could. They're not providing high-quality habitat for large ungulates. And what happens is that ranchers who have irrigated fields in the lowlands and the river bottoms are growing crops, sometimes alfalfa, different hay crops. And the bottom line is that I can drive from Picture Gorge to John Day and count 1,500 head of deer in a half-hour drive. And they are concentrated in the lowlands, even in the summer months, and they ought to be in the uplands. So the bottom line is that the ranchers and farmers are carrying a disproportionate amount of the cost, and there's no compensation for provision of habitat. In fact, we're moving toward the compensation for provision of habitat with the Oregon plan, and we're looking at leases, we're looking at direct acquisition from willing sellers, we're looking at renting, we're looking at providing improvements on property that would screen riparian areas. So in fact, we are moving toward the compensation of landowners for providing habitat, and I think that's the thrust of your testimony today.
Senator George, did you have an issue?
Yes, just really quickly. Mr. Hammond, the other day I asked for the F&W's representative, wasn't it the case that when these special tags were granted to growers, the intention was at that time to give you a vehicle by which you might market those, and that way receiving compensation for the losses that you've incurred from the wildlife? And the answer was, yeah, that was the intention. I think it would be great, and I think that's what you're hinting towards, is the idea that we ask that question today and get it on record that we do accept responsibility. Because you and I know that if I turn my herd of cattle out on your alfalfa field, that you're going to come to me with a nice bill for the amount of forage that my livestock raised. And literally, this is the livestock of the state of Oregon, and I think we need to demonstrate good faith with the folks out there who are maintaining our herd for us and figure out some way for just compensation. So I hope we're able to do something in that direction. I appreciate the Chair's good direction in that point.
And Mr. Chair, if I might follow for a second. So my understanding is that your complaint is about federal land management and their failure to address habitat issues, not that ODF&W is uncooperative or not doing its share of wildlife management. Is that a fair statement?
No. ODF&W, there's a lot of factors that figures into our concerns. ODF&W, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know what their official job description is, but the Bureau of Land Management is responsible for managing federal land. I would think that ODF&W was responsible for having an insight into wildlife from an intricate position. They have the education and all of that. They're not documenting what is actually going on the ground, or else we wouldn't be in the place we are in asking for compensation. If they understood where the wildlife was, the biologists documented it, and they were out on the ground more, I think they would have come forth already before the private landowners came to the contention point that they are over the wildlife use of private property. They have portrayed us as bad guys in the public's view. When a Portland hunter or Salem comes to Harney County and wants to know where the wildlife is, naturally, he goes to ODF&W's office, a district, regional, whatever you want to call it, office in Burns, Oregon. That office, in turn, tells him where the wildlife is. And it just happens that it usually always surrounds private land. So when we're trying to reap a benefit off of the tags that ODF&W gave us, we have to lock our gates. We're closing private land. So they put us in conflict with the general public, not in anybody's best interest.
Thank you.
Mr. Hammond, we're going to have to move on. I appreciate having your written testimony and your comments, or your written testimony and your verbal testimony will be made part of the public record. And I have highlighted the place here that talks about your request to have the committee document potential compensation for documented production damage or economic damage for habitat and management to your private landowners. And I thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you. Could I have forward, please, Paul Hanneman, Joe Easley, and Rod Moore. Mr. Byron, you're on deck. You can move to the front of the room and take a position. Gentlemen, I'd like to have you summarize testimony. Let's have no written testimony read to the committee today. Give us your overview.
Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and start. For the record, Paul Hammond, representing the West Coast Seafood Processors and the Oregon Trawl Commission. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing us time to speak today and appear together. I think we can move more rapidly that way. Mr. Chair, I'll leave this statement with you. I've seen those before. They were prepared by 16 organizations, mostly statewide organizations, in Oregon. And about a year ago, those 16 organizations that are affected by fisheries and wildlife and work in those sectors adopted that statement supporting general fund revenues for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the overall statement includes agriculture and forestry too. And the statement indicates that 0.2% of the state's general fund goes to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. That's the total budget of $9 or $10 billion. Dollars. That's 0.2. That's all the Department of Fish and Wildlife gets. With that, Mr. Chairman, we were going to bring 300 school children today with us with signs and appear on the steps of the Capitol. But instead, I have with me Joe Easley, who is manager of the Oregon Trawl Commission from Astoria. Joe is manager of the Commodity Commission that works with the boats at sea, and Rod Moore, who has survived 17 years with the Committee on Merchant Marine and Fisheries in Washington, D.C., and is based in Portland, and is the manager of the West Coast Seafood Processors Association, and they do have statements regarding the marine resources budget. And that's all we're speaking to today, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you.
Please, for the name, or for the record, your name is?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Ethan. I'm an administrator of the Trawl Commission, and I'd be most happy to summarize rather than read.
Please.
First, let me give you a little bit of my background. I'm lifelong Oregonian, born on the coast, so lived there most all of my life. Spent 25 years at sea and fished a variety of years in different fisheries. And for the last few years, I've been administrator of the Trawl Commission, and I'm presently clear out of boats. Don't own any. Happiest day of my life, I think.
Representative Thompson, are you listening to me?
Mr. Representative Thompson and I go back a long ways. I think he'd understand when I say that a boat's a hole in the water and what you pour money. But anyway, my expertise, if it's any, exists with the Marine Region Program and the budget of ODF&W and not the other. And I've dealt with the Marine Region budget on various levels for a number of years and seen it shrink since 91 by in a staffing by about 18% because of budget cuts. And I believe that it's taken a proportionately higher cut than any other program in the, that's supported at all by fees paid by the users. The non-salmon marine resources pay 1.9% of their value into the state. I believe now it goes into the fisheries fund. At one time it went into the general fund, and then 75% went in the general fund, I believe. The last session is all going in the fisheries fund. But over many, many years, we have not had a like amount of money spent on us. And most of it has gone to salmon for various reasons and a lot of history involved. But I don't want to go into that. But the point of the matter is that right now we're in a position where this state is becoming a bit player almost in the biological game of groundfish, and we have no counterpoint of information, research, and so forth that we need with the Federal Pacific Fisheries Management Council. And I also speak as a member that served on that council for 11 years, as chairman of it for two. So it's taken a toll on the fishermen and in the coastal communities that depend on this resource for a good share of their economic activity and throughout the industry. And with that, I'll shut up, and I'd be glad to try and answer any questions.
Can't let him get away. How do you feel about the situation that's developing where the Oregon Salmon Plan has all this habitat and all these projects around the state that are involved with landowners, and yet the Salt Commission is putting more and more money into the pot and receiving less and less benefits?
Well, not very good, Terry. You know, obviously, Representative Fitzgerald.
He won't even let me call him Terry.
Well, I'm older than him, and he's longer. Anyway, it's a case where for a number of years we were treated very much with benign neglect, both by the state and the federal, and that was fine, and there weren't enough of us that it mattered, and we weren't taking all that much resource, but that's no longer the case, and as you know, ground fish is where the fishing industry is. That's the backbone of the whole thing anymore. And it supports those processors and coastal economies that depend on fisheries. Without it, you wouldn't have much left. About 90% of it's trawl-related, either shrimp or ground fish. And we're facing a situation where the truth is something generated by a model and not by biological data anymore, and it's an untenable situation. We need help.
Couldn't have said it better, right, Representative?
But I wanted to say,
I think all of us have become very skeptical about modeling policies driven by computer modeling. So I think that's a piece of information that we appreciate.
Well, in defense of those models, if you've got the information, I think they're good. But without their statistical analysis is what they are, and without the information where the model has to generate it, you don't know what the heck you're going to get. So what they do is they make a series of runs and keep running and running until it fits some curve that pleases them, and then that becomes the truth, whether it is or not. So it's a case in point was the sablefish in the last assessment went up a substantial amount, but it went up because of some research done by some people that the industry paid for, and it changed the factor of the catch by survey gear. And so that assessment went up 60-some percent over what it had been. But the bottom line is that you could come up with that model with anything from 3,000 tons to 300,000 tons. Pretty valuable idea.
Large order of magnitude for the high and low, isn't it? Well, let's hear from the other witness and move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rod Moore. I'm the Executive Director of the West Coast Seafood Processors Association. Our association represents the majority of groundfish, crab, and shrimp processors in Oregon. If a boat is a hole in the water in which you throw money, a processing plant is the land-based equivalent. especially when we see the situation that's developed over the years, as Joe has described, where we have no real good idea of what's out there in terms of fish, and we need the data to find out, and we don't get the funding to get the data, and so we rely on the sort of computer model that Joe was talking about with no data going into it. And I mean, you all know the phrase garbage in, garbage out, and that's unfortunately what we're getting. So we're very interested in continuing to support the budget for the marine region. Over the years, we've seen a lot of money being generated by the marine fisheries, and unfortunately, that money has not been reflected in the budgets put forward in terms of support for the marine component of the department. And we hope some of that can change. We note that even this year, the $520,000 that's been suggested in the governor's budget, about $120,000 of that is money that was in sort of in the base in the last biennium from the E-Board appropriation, which is not in the base this year, so it's part of the $520,000. And there's another $300,000 that was taken out of the marine region that went to propagation in the last biennium, which didn't get repaid in this biennium. So that doesn't leave you with a whole lot for new money for the marine region. I think the only other thing I would add, I know the governor's budget provides for some more funding for state police. The enforcement, the fish and wildlife enforcement arm of the state police is very important. One of the things that we all need is to make sure that that we're being good citizens, and sometimes it takes an enforcement authority to back that up. So we hope that whatever comes out eventually in the budget does support the fish and wildlife enforcement arm of the state police also. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for the committee? Representative Mitchell.
Yes, Chair. I'm going to ask a question that I would invite any of you three to answer, or whoever wants to answer. And that is, what I'm hearing you say is, that do we have our priorities right? If we've got a chunk of money that we're going to spend on fisheries or the recovery of the fisheries and water quality, and we're spending an awful lot of money and an awful lot of energy on the habitat and water quality, am I hearing you say that we would be more productive if we spent more of that money on what's happening to predation and oceanic conditions?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Messerly, I'm not sure it's a matter of priorities, although there certainly is an inconsistency in the revenue returns that are coming from the marine region versus the outflow that's going in terms of the state budget. Obviously, you don't want to shut down the state by not funding programs that will cause an Endangered Species Act listing for coastal salmon. That's the last thing that we want. On the other hand, when there's a lot of revenue coming in from crab and shrimp and groundfish, and it then goes to salmon, it kind of leaves us hanging, and you know, there's not the money there to support the core programs of the department. I guess that's the best way I can answer your question, sir.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, Mr. Messler, I believe you're somewhere between a rock and a hard spot, and the fact is that if we keep on the track we are with the ground fish and crab and those, that we're likely to be throwing the baby out with the bathwater, in some respects, we've already done that with salmon. I'd hate to see it happen in this case.
Mr.
President Messler.
If I could follow up, we're also very frustrated in the lack of involvement from the federal government in this research. They're more, although we have, I think, an excellent enforcement arm in the state of Oregon, they're more intent on spending money on another enforcement arm from the federal government than they are in helping us with the research. I'm also would be interested in if data produced by California, Washington, or Alaska, or other institutions are developing information that we can apply here in Oregon. And I realize some of that is site-specific, but there's a lack of information and data all over, but especially here in Oregon.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Messerly, we both Rod and I have, put it bluntly, have lobbied extensively for increase in federal commitment to this area. And the fact we've been fortunate to get some. We're still behind any other region in the country. Substantially behind, I might add. And yet, in the ground fish, we have the second highest landings, only behind Alaska, and the second highest in value. We have the least money being spent on it of any of the regions. Our senators are aware of it. They're both working on trying to get us some more. We've gotten good support out of our delegation in Washington, and hopefully we'll be able to turn that around, but it isn't going to happen overnight. But it is moving.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any or all of the of you. One of the things that's bothered me, we've talked about in relationship to the salmon, one of the frustrations that we have of not knowing what the impact of the ocean is and the decline of salmon runs. If I understand correctly, the bottom fish this industry has had reportedly a decline in the harvestable product there. And my question is, do we have any, to your knowledge, do we have any information or any data indicating that there's any kind of a correlation or relationship between the decline of that particular group and the decline of the salmon? As the common ocean conditions adversely perhaps affecting our supply in both, or are they not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jensen, having been somebody who spent a lot of time on the ocean and watched go through cycles before, I'm sure that we've just gone through a cycle that does have that effect to some extent. It appears to me that we're going into a cycle that's much more favorable to salmon and some species of bottomfish, some species that will not be favorable to. But the thing with bottomfish and salmon, and we're going into a more favorable regime for shrimp too, I think, but when you look at salmon and shrimp, you're looking at very young fish when you harvest them. Salmon extremes about 5 years. For coho, it's only a couple. And with bottom fish, you're looking at 12, 14, 16 age classes in the harvest. A short-lived bottom fish is 15 years. Most of them are more like 20, 40 and then up. So you can mask some of that environmental effect in a ground fish fishery if you recognize what's going on. As far as using that type of oceanography in our management, the federal component has one person that's working on that, and I don't get the feeling that he's listened to very much. He has some interesting observations, but I don't see it being used in the assessment work.
Would you touch for a minute on the whiting fishery and what its potential is and how much money that generates, because they may not be aware since some of these members are new?
Well, Mr. Chairman, as you no doubt know, Representative Thompson, the whiting fishery is the largest in volume, not necessarily in money, but it does create a lot of jobs. Each whiting trawler, with the economic studies I've seen, produces 109 jobs when you bring that on shore. Last year, we had 87,000 metric tons of whiting brought ashore, and will again this year, I believe, somewhere right in that neighborhood, depending on how much they give them a cause. But the price will be up, so it'll be of more value. But that was a fishery that... We got some help from Economic Development and the Department of Agriculture and OSU and did a worldwide marketing study and a bunch of food technology studies that the Trawl Commission themselves poured $150,000 into that effort, and we got a chunk of it on shore. We didn't get all of it, but we got a good chunk of it, and it's certainly an economic factor in the fisheries. it's the one really healthy one, I think, that we can point to right now. And in my opinion, at least, and I know there's a lot of even scientists that share it, it's being managed on a very conservative basis.
Mr. Chair, if I could just say that we recognize the effort the department made before the emergency board a year ago this past January, and that appropriation helped some. Appreciated Mr. DeHart's remarks this morning and the concern for that one decision package that would help us some. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. It wouldn't surprise me that if Representative Thompson would make a suggestion to the SR2 committee for a subcommittee to deal with ground fishing issues, but that's his prerogative.
He done.
Thank you. I'd like to bring forward Mr. Byerlin. And Mr. Byerlin, you're representing the Oregon Guides and Packers this morning and the Fish Screening Task Force. Correct. I'd like to also bring forward Dave Peters. He's in the audience.
Could I take a second while they're coming up here?
Absolutely.
I asked a question on whiting because I continuously made comments that the world's overfished. His comment was that we're actually underfishing that one fishery. We've managed on a conservative basis. We think it can be expanded very long where it is. So don't take the idea that all the oceans of the world are being over-harvested. There's still some to be exploited.
Well, Representative Thompson, to your credit, I think you've helped raise the awareness of the several committees in the legislature about the value of the fishing industry to the coast and to the state of Oregon. So your efforts are appreciated there. I think we need a better connection to the information.
Yeah.
Sir, go ahead when you're ready.
My name's Steve Byerlin. I'm past president and current legislative chair for the Oregon Guides and Packers. I also serve as chair of the Fish Screening Task Force. I'm here to represent a couple issues, and I kind of want to separate them a little because some of the comments I made are not from the Fish Screening Task Force, so I'll kind of set that aside just for a second. It's nice to see Steve Hammond here. I've been a guest on his ranch several times and was very impressed with the stewardship on the property, and was there in December one year hunting elk muzzleloader up off of this property and traveled through it. And there was one heck of a lot of animals on his place, and there is a definite impact. He's got some very, very nice fields and hundreds of antelope and deer in the field at times. The guides and packers are very concerned about funding for ODFW, and we have been from the start of this session. We've kind of taken a back steep step back, see how things were going to proceed. I testified before that it was very important to fund ODFW at the highest level possible. We're not happy about the idea of another license fee increase. However, if the committee could not find a way to fund ODFW, the sportsman would step forward in our representation and go with the increased license fee. Let me tell you a reason for that. I live in the town of Gold Beach, which several of you have been to, and Representative Nesley's district and Senator Tarno. We have 22,000 people in the county. There is a fairly good number of those people who are retired. Virtually every other industry relies on the fishing industry in some way. You know, timber and fisheries have always gone together because they do relate. You know, they're both agricultural purposes and they affect each other. We have tour boats, guides, restaurants, motels. A few years ago, we had a closure of our fall salmon season, and every motel and RV park in the area was chucked full. Within 3 days, there was a max exodus of town. It emptied. The tour boats were running 15 boats a day. They dropped to 2. You wonder why somebody riding a tour boat would have anything to do with fishing, but it did relate that way. My fear is that we're deferred till September on a listing for salmon, and they're also relooking at the steelhead. If we don't fund ODFW, we're sending a message to the National Marine Fisheries Service that we're not going to uphold our commitment that we did during the salmon plan, and there was an awful lot of work by some very good people on this committee and a lot of other people in this building to get that in place. I know we have some difficulties with the department. I personally have a great amount of faith in Jim Greer and Joe Rohleder. I think they can get the job done, but you solve problems one at a time. It's easy to recognize multiple problems, you know, and we've all had problems with ODFW. I mean, I've had some battles. I mean, I didn't want to bring up, but I do try and look past that and look for a way to improve things. I think I heard some talk in the building about being more responsive to the legislature and maybe quarterly reports and, you know, different information where we could meet together better and get things going. But it takes a while to change a 1,000-person agency, and neither Joe or Jim has had sufficient time to work their ways, and you know Joe's a tremendous problem solver, you know, and it may be more than, you know, 1 or 2 or 10 people can do, but, you know, at least the job started, but not funding them is, I don't believe, is the right way to go, and that's more guys on the Packers side. And I would like to talk about the fish screening now. I'll try and further that. I sent out some documents that were also supposed to be delivered by ODFW. Roy Ellicker, directs our fish screening project, couldn't be here. His wife had emergency surgery this morning. And so I'm going to kind of fumble through this. We've been working on the fish screening task force since 1991 when it was set up by the state legislature to oversee irrigation diversions for the state and give the department ideas, work with landowners to solve fish screening problems. The first few years, we got nothing done, basically zero, other than taking very expensive screens and making them cheaper. And in some ways, you know, when you say how many screens were put in the ground, and that's when I came on the task force and I started criticizing the production of the fish screening program. They said, well, you sound like a good guy to be on the committee. So I've been on it for about 9 years now. There's been a number of changes. We worked with different policy changes and changed the law a little bit, took it away from being mandatory to being voluntary. That has worked surprisingly well. Last biennium, we are now legislatively directed to put in 150 screens per biennium. Last year, we put in those 150 screens, but 90 of them were pump screens, the most inexpensive kind, the easiest to put on, and those, and only 27 were ditch screens, the type that have more impact on fish and divert more water. We have tried to address screens with the amount of money that we have had in the budget, and it has been running between the $1.4 and $1.2 million. We have not been moving at a very fast rate. We're directed to do 3,500 screens. We've currently done about 600 since the program went into place. We're looking in the 10-year program that the Fish Screening Task Force has come up with of doing 3,000 water diversions. The Measure 66 funds and direction is a perfect opportunity to go into doing some fish screening, which is a partnership with the landowner. You know, this is, there's nothing mandatory about this. But going in, screening these diversions, saving fish, about 1 out of every 10 fish which is found at a fish screen comes back as an adult. And so bang for the buck. You know, there isn't anywhere I can think of where you raise them in a hatchery or anything else that you can come up with that kind of figure. I did do some pencil pushing on a calculator and came out the life of a fish screen being 25 years, and the state put the full $10,000 into it, fish with adult fish returning, if there was 1,000 fish lost in the diversion, which is not uncommon, would come to about $4 a fish. And I don't know how you have a natural spawning fish that you can get any cheaper than that. We also have an opportunity with federal funds that on the packet, the second page shows an article that federal funds are being sought. It's been applied for both in the Senate and the House side. It's moving very well, as far as I know, last I heard. It's a day-to-day situation, but $25 million for 4 Northwest states. We are asking for $4 million biennium for the screening program, which is a much bigger step than we were doing before. We were doing 150 screens in the past. We want to do 600 screens. It's going to take more staff. It's going to take more effort, you know, but it's going to get a heck of a lot more done and save a lot more fish. And we'll be able to apply for these federal funds. And the federal funds, this will be the only state that I'm aware of that will have not only a program in place, but goals set. And we did have a recent survey that I haven't heard spoken of much, you know, at our last task force meeting, of over 30 cubic feet a second diversions. This program here applies to the under 30 with a 60-40 cost share with the landowner. The over 30s on the coast, we were told at the task force that there was about 30 unscreened diversions that were adequately screened, and our latest report come back 430. And so that federal money could be something very well addressed to over 30 screen sites, and we could have a heck of a plan. And I hope you take strong consideration into funding this screening program. I will personally be very disappointed, you know. I put a lot of time and effort into this, and as well as the task force has. And it's kind of, we did what we were directed to by the last legislative session in putting together a 10-year plan. We did the very best we could do, and now we're delivering it.
Thank you, Mr. Sheriff. If I understood the testimony this morning, ODF&W's budget has about $500,000 in it for fish screening, with the hopes that we can find more funding, I believe, in Bella Measure 66. Was that right, Mr. Greer? I think it.
I'd like
you understand the task we've got.
Representative Nestle, I think that what we have in the budget is about $800,000 for fish screening, and we had sought last legislative session, we're going to do also this legislative session, a $400,000 RME, so it would come to 1.2 between the two. With this program, I think that we would be taking care of that.
My name is Dave Peters, Mr. Chairman and members, and actually I'm speaking too about the funding of ODF&W. We have quite a program in Coos County, and Senator Parnell and Representative Messerly are representatives, and we feel that the shortfall in the ODF&W budget would impact us very negatively in our area and throughout the state. And in actuality, if a budget shortfall of the size we're talking about does hit, that means the department will be doing less surveys and less monitoring, which will, of course, mean that they will become even more conservative in allowing the fishermen and hunters to get game, and that would reduce revenues again. So what I'm asking is really to think seriously about funding the department. I've heard that the thinking is if we reduce the cost of licenses, we could sell more licenses and make money, and using the mountain lion tags as an example. But actually, the mountain lion tags is a poor example in the fact that I almost bought a mountain lion tag, and I never bought a mountain lion tag in all my life, and I don't plan to hunt them. But for the cost of a mountain lion tag, while I'm deer hunting or elk hunting, I'd pay $10 for the mountain lion tag just to have it in case I happen to run across a mountain lion. But by reducing the tag doesn't mean that the hunting increased or the actual usage increased. It just made it more convenient for us to buy tags and to hunt them. But and what I'm basically saying is I think with the general fund being what it is, and I wish the money would be funded as a general fund, but as a president of the Steelheaders and a member of the STEP and past presidents of STEP and STAC and Oregonians for Fish and Fishermen, I would like to say that we hate to pay the increase, but it's really not much more than a cup of coffee a month if you went to a cafe and bought one, and that's a small price to pay for our department. So that's all I've got to say. I think that we need the department as it is. In fact, over on the east side, we only have one step biologist. We should have two. We've been asking for years, and it's always had, there's never been enough money for that. And if we cut the budget, we might as well forget that forever, and that's really sad because what we've accomplished in Coos County, we wish it was accomplished all over the state.
I wish you'd all have an opportunity to visit some of our facilities. Ken could probably take you there sometime and show you some of our places, because we have the best returns, I think, in the state, and we will continue to do so as long as we aren't reduced in our capacity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Peters, we discussed with the department this morning on the monitoring in regards to the coho fisheries, which we missed last fall. Mr. Rowletter just informed me that is taken care of now. National Marine Fisheries Service is going to allow fisheries for some period, at least next fall. But my question to you is the cooperation that you're getting from the department, I understand why you support the budget, but what kind of cooperation are you getting? Is that improved? Are you getting the, and I don't mean just for the biologist, I know we have an excellent biologist helping down in our area, but as far as helping in the management and the operation of your programs, and what is the support to the STEP groups, and what is the feeling of your membership?
I think that's kind of a loaded question there, but truthfully, I've always had great support from the department. I don't know any other wildlife department that I could speak to, the people that I can speak to in this department. It's tremendous. However, the STEP groups, such as the fry issue on the hatch boxes, are kind of curved a little bit from their desires. We in Coos County have been allowed to do more than anybody else in the state. And we actually have a fish count in the state that anybody else in the state would love to have. And it has not happened throughout the state, so I can only talk from one area, that's Coos and Coquille areas, and we're allowed to do more than anybody else, and we could do more, but cooperation-wise, we get a tremendous amount of cooperation, and we do have a tremendous biologist, and that we have accomplished a tremendous amount down there. Unfortunately, when you have a volunteer group and you have a paid group, you don't exactly have what you call a perfect mesh. And the department, I think somebody said there's 1,000 members in the department. Well, you have 1,000 members and they all aren't marching in the same direction, which shouldn't surprise anybody, because none of us do. I can name our Coquille step group and our Coos River step group, and there's no agreement between the two groups on how to raise fish, even though they're both successful. And you have the same thing in the department. And then sometimes we do run across cases, and I'll give an example. In our striped bass program, which is not a STEP program, but in the striped bass example, the striped bass program was agreed to in the Coos Basin plan. And that was spent 3 years of research by everybody involved in Coos Basin in the fishery. And they finally came to the conclusion that there would be a striped bass fishery maintained in Coos State region, and that fishery would be maintained by a supplementation of planting every year. Last year, that striped bass program was reduced and then slated to maybe even be cut off. No meetings were called. No groups were asked. It was just done. It took 3 years to put that program, the Coos Basin plan, in effect with striped bass, and it took one day with one person in the department to decide that shouldn't go. And right now, we're having to fight to try and get that back. So that's not cooperation, and that's not cooperating with the people, but that's an example that's bad. On the other hand, if you take a look at what we've accomplished with the department, if you take when we talked about Coos and Coquille step, the steelheaders, Southwest steelheaders down there, the tremendous program they have down there. We couldn't do it without the department and the hatchery, because most of our fish have to be raised to smolt level and have to be done with the
department doing it because we don't have the fresh water. So we have tremendous cooperation for other members. So in answering your question, yeah, we have tremendous amount of cooperation on one hand, and sometimes we don't. But I think that's normal with 1,000 people in one organization. But as a whole, I feel very confident that a lot of changes have been made this last year, and a tremendous amount of work has been done to create a much smoother functional togetherness between the steps and the department. So I hope that answers the question.
Thank you. Dan, do you have something you wanted to add?
Yes, very briefly. Mr. Chair, I'm Jan Lee with Oregon Water Resources Congress, and I just wanted to share with you that the Congressional House voted, I believe it was 428-7, to go ahead with the authority for fish screens for $10 million a year. I believe the bill provides the first year's appropriation and then would have to be renewed annually thereafter. I wanted you to know that we were working with a new portion of the committee that would deal with the over 30 screens, and we're finding some other funds so that we don't have to access the state funds. Thank you.
How much of that, Jan, would be for Oregon? You have an idea?
It's $10 million for the four Northwest states, okay, that we're working right now with the Army Corps, whose budget it's within, to be ready to take all the money before Idaho, Washington, and Montana are at the table. But quite frankly, the Montana folks don't want to talk about fish screens. The Washington folks have mainly been funded through the Columbia River project, and Idaho is a little reticent about screening also, except the larger districts have been screened by the Bureau. So we probably are the group of people that has the most access to the money and the most need.
Thank you.
Could I make a comment, Mr. Chair?
No.
Okay. Okay, I will.
It was funny when we left. This is the retribution for coming west. Well, my name is Bob Lund. I'm from LeGrand, Oregon. I'm here representing myself, and I would like to speak in favor of House Bill 2100, which is for an increase in license and tag fees for hunting and angling licenses. The biggest concern that we have, or I guess that I have in LeGrand, I'm familiar with several of the people that work for the Department of Fish and Wildlife in LeGrand. I'm very familiar with what they do. We have some very bright people there. I started out trying to figure out a way to come up with a statistical thing the way everybody else does, with a pie chart and everything else, but I'm not very good at that, so I simply took it to the level that I understood. I figured that with a hunting license increase, a deer tag, and an elk tag, that my costs are going to go up $16.25 a year. And then with what I had written there, I broke that down into what's fairly simple to me, and I would like to just have you consider it from that point of view. The biologists and the state police officers that we have in Eastern Oregon are fairly valuable to us. They're some of the best resources that the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon State Police gives to people in Eastern Oregon. And feel if the fee increase is not approved, that there's a very good likelihood, with some of the figures that Mr. Greer has provided, that we may not be able to keep the same level of staffing that we have, and in fact may lose some of those people. That's basically what I have. And could I answer any questions for you?
I wonder, illustration is not lost on the committee in terms of what it would cost the individual for increasing the fee. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ron Gross from the Grand Oregon also. I'm just an average older sportsman who recently retired and now have more time to get involved in the things I'm interested in and, most importantly, become more knowledgeable about some of the issues. I have taken the time to go down and visit with our district office staff to learn the basics of the budget only and the sources of revenue. And, of course, as you see, we've also taken the time to drive over 600 miles today, down to get home tonight. So we are interested. I belong to several sportsmen's groups, but my comments are primarily my own thoughts. But most of the people feel the same way regarding the proposed rate increase. Very supportive of that. And even the people that I've heard maybe say something negative, it's not very negative, because they're giving their requests they've made in the past that go into field biologists and OSP law enforcement. So the public, I think, feels good about that in Eastern Oregon. I know I do. The other issue, as far as an increase in general fund support, and that's why I'm down here, something I've always felt very strongly about. There should be more general fund support because the department provides so many services to so many people that don't buy hunting and fishing licenses. We all should be paying. For example, I found out just chasing the wolf around cost $11,000 for a district, trying to get him back, $50,000 for cougar control. And the list goes on and on. You know, if I need bird boxes for my small acreage, I go to ODF&W. Now, there are volunteer groups that don't hunt and fish that do some of this work. But in summary, I'm very supportive of increasing the load and the burden on the general fund as much as it can be. And I don't have a formula for what's fair and what's proportionate. But, again, please consider that and consider the budget proposal you have and the revenue sources that include that. And my last comment is, I've been out of state for a while, actually hunting in another state, but I know there's been some controversy in the paper and comments made on ODF&W and not being within in touch with the people and things of that nature. And I was real glad to see that there is going to be a two-year review instead of an immediate action. But when I work with those people, what I see is a department. There's staff being pulled 100 different directions by 100 different interests. I'm pulling 5 of those directions in my own personal interest. And so if you're doing what I want you to do, you're in touch with me. And if you're not doing what I want you to do, you're not in touch with me. That's not fair and professional judgment. So please don't let those feelings, if they exist, affect the impact of this budget. We need those people in the Grand and throughout the state. Thank you.
Yes, I don't want to sound a broken record, but pretty much the same thing. I'm a private landowner, Mr. Chair, in northeastern Oregon, North Powder area. I'm a National Ski Patrol at Anthony Lace, high school basketball coach. I run around with a lot of different walks of life. I put up stuff from hay, 16,000 tons every summer in the Baker area and a little bit down in the Grand Ronde Valley. Come in contact with a lot of people in our area. And I think I could probably say that in defense of the local bios in our region, people out there really trust them. And they really feel good about someone come out, looking in the eye, shake their hand, kick the dirt, and follow up. And really concerned, what may happen if we do have some of these budget cuts in our region. Going back to the patrol and basketball, there's a lot of people that visit our ranch, not just hunting. We do hunt. We enjoy hunting, but I'd say 99% of the time we're out there, we're either driving around with people, whether it be cattlemen, sports, hunting groups, just people from town, and sharing our ranch, opening our doors to them. And I'm very supportive of the general fund deal. I guess I'm kind of getting off one or the other, but I don't want to take a lot of time. You guys have already hit on it, but I think that's the key points is, Let's not move the guys out of northeastern Oregon. They're doing a damn good job in supporting the private landowners. And, people want to get into this deal about supporting wildlife. I'm all for that. So let's all chip in. I don't think it should be strictly a hunting issue. We enjoy, like many other people, 99% of the time looking out the window just to see the wildlife to show that So we're doing things right out there, and we're not alone. There's a lot of good people out there.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lund, Mr. Brett, and you. We've all testified to the need for training the highly qualified ODF and ODF staff in the field. Can you characterize the relationship between the landowners and the folks in the field? Is it a good relationship?
I think that the relationship is basically good. There's exceptions with some landowners, as there are in any. Probably people that some of you don't mesh with completely at times. Overall,
where'd you get that?
I know, that's just a suggestion that maybe one of the other committees, they have someone who knew. But overall, they're very good. I know ranchers, I know hunters, I know fishermen, I know people in small industry in Union County, for the most part, with a few small exceptions that, I mean, things are going to happen anywhere, but overall, I believe they're very good. Pretty good. Mostly good. I also know that some of the people in Portland, and there again, they have some people there that may not always mesh, but overall I think it's good.
One thing I've noticed over the years that maybe partly answers your question is a degree of sympathy for the field biologists and the regional directors at the time it gets to the commission level. The biological reasons for the recommendations are not considered. Again, back to politics, economics, some of those reasons are right why the commission has to change them. But still, I can certainly sense, at least years ago, a great deal of frustration, job burnout. And I think that's natural. That's the arena that this commission or this department operates in. Push, pull, tug. And at the bottom, you're the one with the maybe the most feeling for it from your point of view, because that's how you're trained. But as far as in our LeGrand office, I can't really answer that completely as far as if you're asking how they work with the LeGrand administrators or the Portland ones. It's not fair for me. I don't have that kind of knowledge to really comment on that. It's just other than the frustration. If that's true, like I said, in almost any job.
Thank you for making the trip over today. I appreciate your testimony.
Sure. Yes, I'm Tom McDonald from Summer Lake Trout Farm in Eastern Oregon. A couple things we'd like to go over on the we do support the fee increase for fish and game, but on your tag thing down there for deer and elk on 13, I've got land over by Polina, and we have a lot of times up to 400 to 600 head of elk on the ranch, and we sent bills every year into the state for the damage that was done. Of course, we never even got a response back. But the tag should be issued where they could be. He probably already knows about the bills that we send in. We finally quit because it was wasting the stamps. But, you know, on this, it doesn't say when the animals are on your place. And that's the only revenue you can get is by selling these tags. And by limiting the amount of tags you can sell on there, to, I think it says over here, you can sell so many per acre is all you can sell, two tags if you on the amount of acres or amount of tags that you get. you should be able to sell them all because it's the only compensation you got. And if you drive up these valleys where there's alfalfa hay, that's where all the game is feeding. But the worst thing about this is the federal land that backs up to all this stuff. You go over there and hunt for 5 minutes and you chase 400 head of elk off your ranch and they go onto the federal land and you don't get anything. You know, they might not be back for the week or 10 days that the season's there. And I feel that I listened to the last testimony from the last people there, and we had a problem over in our area of them issuing 2,000 doe tags. And we asked the Fish and Game where they come up with that number. They said it was from talking to the local ranchers around. And we asked to see the names, and the paper had been lost on who she talked to. And our deer population has really went down since those doe tags were issued. And I feel that there should be a lot more input on or study done on the amount of animals in these areas before they issue these doe tags. And we feel that we sell trout out of our ranch over there, and we feel that that we can sell them at a lot cheaper price than what the state can raise them for. And they should, areas like that, and anything that can be used at where you can sell it for cheaper should be looked at more and go to more private areas if you can get a cheaper price.
I'd just like to follow up with what Thomas said. My name's Lyle Negus. I'm from Summer Lake, Oregon. And some of our bordering states have had a program where they purchase larger size fish from private aquaculture facility, and they plant fish from 1 pound up to 16-18 pounds, and those states that are doing that have been able to sell more licenses at a higher fee, mainly because when someone takes their kid or their grandkid out to fish, if they I can catch a pound or 2 pound trout, like it's fun. I mean, it's a lot better than catching a 6 ounce trout. So, but in order to, sometimes we have to invest some money so you get a program like that started, and that's why we would support a higher license fee. Thank you.
Senators, representatives, and chairman, I'm John Pong from Elk City, and we have 4 pages there. The second, or the last page, is from a store in our area on the Sluts River, and voicing their concerns with ODF and W. And we have a strong concern about the children and the families and the small businesses that have been hurt by ODF and W, and we believe that there's basically 5 interests that control the fish park: logging, charter boats, guides, draggers, and metro fishing clubs. And members from each of these interests help ODF&W with their regulations and policies. These same interest groups have the capital, or I should say ODF&W has the capital to pay for basically a full-time lobbyist to assist them with their image and getting the regulations they need to benefit them. Now, where does that put the children and families and the average sports fisherman? What happened to the days when the government employees did the job, best job possible, and were willing to represent all of the people? The fishing and hunting should be for our children and families first and foremost. ODF&W is taking the enjoyment from both. The regulations are just about impossible for adults to read, let alone our children be able to comprehend. ODF&W has taken away nearly all bait fishing. And made it just about all fly fishing and lures. And how many five-year-olds have we seen fly fishing? It has been said to me by one ODF&W commissioner, the governor's representative for the salmon restoration, and a high-ranking ODF&W employee, and I quote, if the children want to fish, they can go to the lakes. The rivers and streams are ours. I don't understand. There have been statistics from the Aquinnah River to warrant the catching and keeping of cutthroat. Now ODF&W is saying they made a mistake with the population on the Celeste River. With these two facts in hand, we have to get on the agenda in August and try to get it open again. And what do all these tax-paid studies and surveys amount to? Could it be that if they don't get what they want, they'll just do another survey until they can convince someone to fund what they want? And I'd like to just recap. We've been over here for three Senate hearings. At the first Senate hearing, when Mr. Greer and his right hand were here, for 2 hours, their total time was how ODF&W needs more money. When one senator asked what you could tell your constituents they would get for a raise in fees, there was 5 minutes of runaround, and never in our eyes did Mr. Greer ever answer the question. And also after this hearing, there was a directive over a multi-party phone conversation from same individual, making sure that those on the other end of the phone knew what to answer. If you remember, ODF&W stated that they needed an excise tax on anything used outdoors to create more revenue. I hope they never find out air is free. Then they talk about strategic planning. How many millions of dollars is this costing the taxpayers, which could be put to good use in their shortfall? Mismanaged studies have proven that their strategic planning is a farce. The second hearing we attended was regarding bears, mountain lions, and other predators. ODF&W has a 26,000-acre fenced-in preserve to create a hybrid elk. That was the one comment that almost slipped by. And that they were trying to create a better strain of elk. Why are they trying to play God, and what is this costing the public? 26,000 acres. ODF&W had statistics showing predators were moving into urban areas. It isn't that amazing that their own figures show that this happened when gates started going up, closing off private, state, and federal timberland. If hunters can't get near the predators to hunt, what can they expect? Of course, a simple solution could be in the areas that they have problems. They could issue more tags. The third hearing we attended was the salmon bashing on the LC. And that is when it hit home about creating a better elk. They were talking about DNA, genes, chromosomes, molecules. What are we playing with here? When they get done with all their hybriding, will a disease come along that our native fish and wildlife would resist and wipe out all of their hybrid stock? These people are supposed to be in charge of a simple fish and wildlife program. And again, they are playing God and are going to get their hands burned. During this time, I think there's a couple of you here that can remember, we tried to call Portland with three different questions. And each time, with each question, we were told that there was only one person who was programmed to answer that question. And each time we called, that person happened to be gone, so we could never get an answer to a simple question. And these are our employees. And actually, what the heck is the big secret that they don't want us to know? And now several ODF&W employees have been caught playing games with special hunts. These individuals are not only stealing from the taxpayer, but also the hunter. They should be dismissed immediately, as well as the supervision, if they allow this to go on. The same holds true if there was favoritism or nepotism. And what a way to teach our youngsters Do people believe that our young people cannot read a newspaper and understand? I would hate to be the dad who must now explain why they did not get their special tags. And the raffles and auctions of hunting tags are geared to no one. But where this is leading to, when the well-to-do will be the only ones able to fish and hunt. And the same thing is going on with the fish side. There are special interests helping with the regulations. Witness the fly fishing rules. And maybe our expert fly fisherman, the governor, would like to explain why this is in effect to our children. We should be protecting our salmon resource, the river system. But yet we are making the individual who only has a small boat or bank fishes pay for the charter boats, and the individuals who have boats big enough to go into the ocean can fish for the so-called endangered species. And again, hey, Dad, how come we can't go to the ocean and fish for salmon? Well, son, we don't have enough money. It really hurts to see the small stores upriver, and we're one of them, who has got hurt real bad from ODFW. And you have trouble making ends meet. And this salmon thing that they opened on the ocean, the charter boats seem to be able to go out there and do it. And it's really nice that the charter boats can go out and enjoy themselves while we struggle to make ends meet. ODFW, and I'm not talking about our local people, will not listen on hunting or fishing issues. And common sense is not in their vocabulary. In the next 20 years, they have to think about this. They project Portland's population to grow an additional million people. Rather than wait until the fish are in endangered status, let's protect our salmon. One proposal we made to them was by lowering the sportsman's salmon limit to something reasonable, like 5. And cutting back the commercial limits appropriately so everybody is equal. And then, as in our case, there's got to be points that they can close these rivers to salmon fishing, which would put a stop to the snagging of the salmon just for the eggs, and it would protect them. We not only need to cut ODFW's budget, but also reduce upper management to one individual and have a zone staff to oversee all the field offices and make decisions and regulations for their own zone after careful interaction with local individuals who live and die the fishing and hunting. In closing, the salmon and elk have survived for thousands of years without the extravagant cost of someone's whim of high breeding. Thank you.
Can I have Karen and Kelly
here? Hi.
For the record, my name is Kelly Smith. I live in Bend, 63570 Johnson Road. Chair Ferrioli, members of the subcommittee, I'm here today representing the Access and Habitat Board of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'm a hunter representative on that board. As you may be aware, it consists of hunter and landowner representatives. And I've been on the board since its inception. The board was started by the 1993 legislature, and in late 1993, the board was convened for the first time, and I've been happily serving on that board since. The purpose of the Access and Habitat Board was to enable better wildlife management by basically improving relations between hunters and landowners around the state. The ANH board has asked me to convey their thoughts to you today. The way the board works is that hunters' dollars through a surcharge on license and tag fees are collected, the board hears proposals from primarily from landowners around the state, and acts to approve those or recommend approval of those projects to the Fish and Wildlife Commission. The project dollars are used primarily to either improve habitat on private lands, increase hunter access to private lands, or to decrease damage or deal with damage on private lands. I believe it's fair to say that it has been and continues to be a very successful and popular program, both with landowners and with hunters around the state. The A&H board met yesterday in Eastern Oregon. Bend is only about 130 miles from here, but to get here, I drove through Pendleton on the way, so sort of the scenic route to get to Salem. We met in Heppner, actually, yesterday, and the board decided, resolved to send you their unanimous and enthusiastic support for the ODF&W budget. We believe that the wildlife of the state can be appropriately managed only if there are enough good field biologists to carry out the studies, the planning, the monitoring, and to conduct projects and interface with landowners and hunters and the other publics that they serve. Department funds have been cut in recent years, and that's created some major shortfalls in programs such as the Green Forage Program, which is designed to deal with damage caused to private lands by wildlife, the Deer Enhancement and Restoration Program, and other programs that basically deal with some of the problems that you've heard today from private landowners. As a consequence, our access and habitat funds are being used up more rapidly all the time. We're having to fund projects from landowners that where those projects could have been funded by the Green Forage or the Deer program in the past. I would point out that that A&H projects have a number of ways of helping private landowners with problems caused by wildlife. And there are some mechanisms for direct compensation to private landowners, in contrast to what you've heard earlier. These include hunting leases. They include payments for fertilization, for weed control, for fencing, for hazing, and acquisition in some cases, where that acquisition is desired by the landowner and would be helpful to the public. In addition, there's a mechanism for landowners to apply for and receive additional landowner preference tags through the A&H program, and we've done that in most cases where they've been requested. So finally, I would reiterate that the A&H board urges you to vote in favor of the proposed ODF&W budget and avoid further cuts and promote better relationships with private landowners in the state. Are there any questions?
My name is Karen Smith. I'm from Bend, Oregon. I'm an avid big game hunter. I'm a national director of the Yielder Foundation. I've been a past member of the OHA, Oregon Hunters Association, a past director on the state board. I'm now in the local Bend chapter. I also teach big game hunting to Oregon Outdoor Women, which are sponsored by ODF&W. So a lot of my experience with ODF&W is on the field. I've been on everything from blacktail study in Medford with Don Peter, trapping blacktail deer, releasing bighorn sheep in Bend. I educate kids in hunting with the youth hunts at Denman. I've worked with Pat Ray in Corvallis with the Oregon Outdoor Women. So I've been all over the state working with field biologists and different people. I've also worked with the people in Portland office. Have a relationship there too. I've seen a lot. I strongly support the ODFW budget. I'm in favor of raising my license fees. As a mother of a hunter, I'm for preserving an agency that preserves habitat and wildlife and hunting rights for my son's future and his children's future. We need to continue to support the efforts of ODFW so that they can study and protect habitat and wildlife. In addition, though, to raising fees, general fund appropriations should be substantially increased so that the Oregonians share in the cost of wildlife management. In the Wildlife Division, general funds provide 2% of the total funding. In my years of working with the biologists, ODFW biologists in all parts of the state, I've seen them wear a lot of different hats. They have to walk a fine line between landowners, hunters, fishermen, non-hunters. They are not in charge of a simple program. I have watched the staff in the field, in the Portland office, work long hours. They give their heart and soul to habitat and wildlife, and to people, too. Most of my work has been on the weekends and at nights with them, and I also see them in the office in the daytime, so I know the long hours. I've seen it. I've been there with them. This is not a career to make big money. Job security is kind of iffy, and they don't get instant gratification. It's usually long-term projects that they work on. I've not always agreed with their methods. We've had our difficulties. But when I've had a problem and the local office couldn't handle it, I made phone calls to Portland office. And I found that my phone calls were returned. The doors were open. And it was a good feeling. They listened. They wrote down notes. And they acted on it. Not always the way I wanted them to, but they tried. And that feels good. That's okay. I've worked with OSP in the field, and I've seen their shortage. There's not enough of them. I'm a landowner also in Bend, and when we've reported a deer being killed out of season, it's taken a long time for one or two OSP officers to get there because they're on the other side of the county or state. So we need more of those guys. All the hunters and non-hunters I've talked to with, they've agreed with those views. The department continues to face a greater workload with fewer funds, and there is no fat in their budget. I support the maximum funding appropriations from all methods available for OSP and ODFW. Please vote to approve the ODFW budget. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Glenn Stonebrink. I work for the Oregon Cattlemen Association, and in the essence of time, and hopefully another opportunity to, because I live close by, to testify in this committee, I'd like to defer to President-elect of the Oregon Cattlemen Association. He will be the president for the year 2001, John Hayes from Baker County. Welcome, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. My name is John Hayes. I'm a cattle rancher in Baker County, Oregon. I appreciate being able to testify before you today. It is vital that you hear from some of us from the rural areas of Oregon. Number one, ranchers, farmers, and other private landowners provide habitat for 80% of the wildlife that is enjoyed by the public. We ranchers in eastern Oregon have established a good relationship with the field biologists of ODFW. They understand the landowners' contributions and have implanted ODFW's programs that are essential in maintaining the good relationship. For example, green forage programs, fencing for haystacks, support for animal damage control through funding of wildlife services, and the effort to return the wolf back to Idaho experimental population under the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Regardless of fee increases, the Oregon Cattlemen Association insists on these basic issues being maintained by ODF&W. Number one, the Green Forage Program and its current funding. Retain the field biologists in their current capacities. Keep Craig Ely as our regional director, who has been, for the past year and a half, has been the interim. He was born in the Pendleton, Eastern Oregon area. He's a natural and does a heck of a job for us. We really appreciate it. He's got a lot of the recognition from people in our area. Report support for wildlife services to control predators. Right now, I think it's $85,000. It should be more. Support a no-wolf policy in Oregon. Support reducing the cougar and bear and coyote population. And another thing is stand up and not let U.S. Fish and Wildlife dictate how our state is ran. It is time to tell them to take a hike. They're costing us too much money. They don't understand our problems here, and they need to take and get out of our business. We could handle it a lot better without them. And I think Commissioner Greer would enjoy that, too. We, the Oregon cattlemen, would like to see some serious efforts to obtain control of the seal and sea lion population. That is why we introduced Senate Bill 988, so that there would no longer be foot dragging or poor excuses given for not obtaining control of these predators. Ranchers and farmers are easy targets by the conflict industry and agencies. We get the blame for diminishing fish runs even when they're not good science behind them to prove that our activities have caused any harm. It has become quite obvious that many people have made a good living off trying to solve the problems concerning reducing numbers of salmon, steelhead, trout, and endangered species. Therefore, we will probably not see an end to this problem for generations to come. Cattlemen have been accused of not stepping up to the plate when it comes to fish and wildlife habitat. Once again, it is the private landowner that presently provides the overwhelming majority of the habitat, and actually we own the plate. I have let the department have juvenile hunts, handicap hunts, senior citizen hunts at my place for free, and fishing is never denied on my place. I have a real hard time turning anybody down that wants to hunt or fish. It's just not in me. I can tell you personally that over 1,000 deer and elk eat their lunch on my pasture land. I have over 25,000 acres, and I know that for a fact. I grow crops to feed my cattle. That is my livelihood. My livelihood and many of my friends in the ranching business are nearly at the end of our ability to economically remain on the land. This is partially due to increased pressure to share our crops, feed the predators, comply with needless rules and regulations such as the 401 compliance Camp Creek decision from the federal courts. That cost me approximately $6,000 only to have the courts overturn their decision, which meant it was never needed in the first place. Reduce production to comply with the 10-10 plan and fight against the never-ending environmental lawsuits filed by conflict industries. Make the people that sue pay for the loss. Make attorneys that take on these settlements for contingency basis, make them share the expenses. It becomes harder and harder to concentrate on being a true environmentalist who loves the land in a way that no bureaucrat can imagine. When our pockets are turned inside out from fighting against those who despise production of agriculture. Hunting tag scandal, there should be some strong discipline on these issues. Leadership of ODF&W must take action that will attempt to restore some credibility to the department. The scandal has spread throughout the department and employees feeling the brunt of it. Morale is low and undeserving. I understand ODF&W is planning to cut some 37 biologists in the field, possibly 10 or 12 Oregon State Police positions. Have been reported to have hired 22 new people in the head office, hired 5 new coordinators for information and education, a new marketing specialist, and a new lobbyist. Have remodeled the head office for $839,000. Hiring new supervisors to implement the new watershed organizations. In conclusion, it is imperative that ODF&W retain present field biology positions, the green forage plant, support of wildlife services for predator control, provide a no wolves in Oregon policy with adequate funding to return all wolves to Idaho, and please improve the tag process. This is why a lot of the revenue is down. Who knows 9 months in advance where they will be, if you're alive, plus where you're going to be, what you're going to do. It's better when we went in on a Friday night and you bought your tag and hunted on Saturday. The present management for the past 10 years has reverted into the loss of game and the loss of many things. So I think we're overmanaged. I'm in the process right now of reorganizing the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. I'm a representative, and we're going from scratch because our organization is not working. And I've spent the last 6 months on that. I've been in Washington, D.C., and also in Denver almost every other week. We're going to make our process work, and we're throwing out a lot of things that people don't like, but you have to do it if you're going to make the thing effective. Do you have any questions, please?
I thought it might make sense for Mr. Greer to respond to this. I've never heard of this $839,000 for remodeling.
Chair and Senator Corcoran, if I was to go down the list here that Mr. Hayes has provided, yes, we have hired some new people. Most of those are coming out of the point-of-sale contract.
Give Mr. Greer a chance to respond.
Mr. Chair,
I guess I just want to make the point, though, that we do have to separate fact from fiction, and an allegation that's made and unanswered, you know, it doesn't do us a hell of a lot of good. You got a room full of people here probably aren't going to be at our hearing tomorrow. And so, you know, I would just caution when people make allegations, fine, say anything you want to the country, but, it's not a good give and take process for us in terms of public policy making to, we spend half of our lives here sorting out fact and fiction, so that was the reason that I was asking to respond.
Mr. Chair, no, that's incorrect. In terms of the $839,000, most of those remodeling efforts were coming out of the point-of-sale program where we formerly had a contract with GTEC. Essentially, these are the people that are replacing the GTEC contract, and we also did a significant amount of remodeling with those dollars to accommodate those people within the Portland office. So a lot of that had to do with just resizing the building so we could accommodate those new positions that essentially we had money for out of the original GTEC contract. The majority of it was, yes. At the same time, we made some other smaller modifications just to make more efficiencies with the use of the space of the Portland office. So that was done with a few other dollars within savings that we had for this prior year, but most of those were associated to the point of sale program.
Mr. Chairman, could I shed a little light on the, not going to talk about them in detail. I assisted Mr. Hayes with these figures, and these are the things that we're hearing about, and we wanted to be able to get them on record so that, as Senator Corcoran has asked the question, justifiably so, we could either have them explained, denied, or confirmed, rather than just hearing about them continually, because we have to be open and honest about it, we believe. I'd also like to Just because I deferred testimony doesn't mean that I don't have some, and I would like to reserve an opportunity to come back at when it's more convenient, or even at the end of this hearing if there's time.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. I appreciate your consideration, and all of the have an opportunity to respond to it, and part of the reason you have outside Salem and in the field. So I think we're serving that question pretty well. Thank you very much, Mr. Stonebrink and Mr. Hayes. I think we've talked to just about everybody that was over 100 miles away from the existence of Dan Hansen,
John Takeover, and Tom Street. Anybody that accompanies you? Good afternoon, sir. Afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Krawdoffer. I'm a fishing guide from Tillamook. I drove over today after fishing half a day with a couple clients. They thought it was real important that I come over and testify before you. I'm here to support the department's budget. In the Tillamook area, I'd like to give you some specific examples. A lot of these people are talking in generalities, but in our Tillamook office, our district covers everything from Astoria to almost Lincoln City. We have one biologist. Now, we have the Tillamook Basin, five rivers. We have the Nestucca Basin, two rivers. We have the Nehalem Basin, two rivers. This one biologist tries to cover everything. We need more money. If we're going to save our salmon, all the timber efforts, all the fishing efforts, the reduction in bag limits, all that sort of stuff, which I've been a part of in Tillamook County, aren't going to do any good if we don't have any money for Mr. Greer. It's not going to work. Our state police, I was in talking to the state police sergeant in charge of the Tillamook office yesterday. He covers everything north of Lincoln City to about Cape Falcon. That's about, if you figure 20 miles inland to the Coast Range, that's 1,200 miles. He has one game officer. It's not humanly possible to patrol that area with one game officer. There's a sergeant in that office also, but he's in charge of the McMinnville office and the Banks office and the Tillamook office. It's not possible. He can justify seven officers, but we haven't had seven game officers in Tillamook since I was a little kid. We just need more money. A man mentioned seals. I know it's a real controversial subject, but I'd like to tell you that there were about 12 boats fishing Tillamook today. I saw not one salmon caught by an angler. I saw, and we kept track because I knew it was coming here today, we saw 16 salmon killed, one by a seal and the rest by terns and cormorants. Now, if something isn't done, money isn't going to do it. When I was a little kid, you took three things when you went fishing. You took your lunch, your fishing license, and your shotgun, and we took care of the problems. We didn't indiscriminately shoot birds. We didn't indiscriminately shoot seals. But if they were causing a problem, we took care of it. And we need the legislature to get involved with the federal government and get these Marine Mammal Acts back into line where we can do something about it. I witness it every day out there fishing. The birds are terrible on our fish. We need more money, you know, to support these programs. We have some harassment programs in place right now on the Nestucca Bay. There's two people on Tillamook Bay. That bay's huge. You scare 200 birds up in one place, they're going to fly 2 miles, set down, and start feeding again on the salmon. So I appreciate your time. I came over here in a hurry today. I wasn't really prepared, but I thought it was necessary to support Director Greer and his staff. They do an awfully good job. I work very well with them, and they just need the money. And I'd really feel bad 20 years from now if one of my grandkids came up to me and said, John, why didn't you save us some salmon? A lot of this saving the salmon is in your hands. You give him the money, he's going to do his best to save the salmon. If he doesn't have any money, our salmon are going to go bye-bye. Thank you.
No. I just wanted to say I didn't hire him to come over and say this.
No, but
the relationship here,
no, I didn't know it.
Senator Thompson,
testimony sounds almost verbatim what I said.
Senator Thompson probably doesn't realize, but before I was a fishing guide, I had a salmon troller, and I used to troll out of Newport.
He was just getting into dragging at that time. But when you live on the coast, you see a different perspective of somebody that lives in Portland and sits behind the desk. We see the seals eating the salmon. We see the birds eating the salmon. The fishermen are the ones that have taken the brunt of the punishment because of the reduced seasons, reduced bag limits, the increase in license fees. Now it's time for the general public to step forward and come up with some money. Thank you.
I'd like to bring Walt McGovern and Frank Warren, please. Al Elkins and Sandy Anderson.
Is that right?
Come on up to the front and take your questions. We have about 40 minutes to finish our testimony for today.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Walter McGovern. Since I beat Frank here, I'll go first. I have been working with the Department of Fish and Wildlife when probably Director Greer, who, by the way, is a breath of fresh air, would probably suck comb sucking lollipops. And I have worked even before former Representative Hanneman came up with the terrific bottle bill that he did. So I have seen the department with a variety of different directors, and overall I think you get your best bang for your buck from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I was on the Governor Attia's Salmon Advisory Committee for three terms. I was a co-author of the Steelheader Bill that made steelhead a true game fish through initiative petition. I've been a national director of Trout Unlimited, and I'm an ardent fisherman who spends not as much time as Clodhopper down at the Tillamook, but almost as much. The fee that we pay for this little license enables me to fish 365 days a year, except for the days that my wife won't let me fish. I went to it's a terrific bargain. I went to a concert Friday night, the Chieftains. I paid $20 for 2 hours. I paid $4 for parking. I paid $4 for the service fee for the privilege of buying the ticket. Compare that with the $20 that you pay for your fishing license. It's a terrific bargain, and any increase that they're asking for is minuscule. Likewise, so far as the general funds, we have a lot of people who use our boat ramps, the rafters, the kayakers, the splash and giggle groups in their inner tubes, who do not pay anything unless they're a fisher or hunter, and usually they're not. Now, you may not be aware of it, but starting this year in the state of Washington, you now must have a decal that you receive if you buy a fishing or hunting license for many of their properties to use. I'm not advocating that, but I'm advocating the minor increase that they asked for here. Finally, I'd like to say that Lieutenant Lindsey Ball is probably one of the best troopers that you had manning the game department enhancement area in some time, and he does need more troopers to preserve our natural resources. I thank you for the opportunity.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Frank Warren. I'm here today to talk to you in support of the department's budget. By way of introduction, I became involved as a charter boat fisherman off the mouth of the Columbia River in 1976. I've since served as president of the Oregon Coast Charter Association. I served as a member of the Salmon Advisory Subpanel for the Pacific Fishery Management Council in the early 80s. In 1988, the Secretary of Commerce appointed me to the Pacific as a member of Oregon's delegation to the Pacific Fishery Management Council. I currently have been retreaded to become a member of the Ground Fish Advisory Panel for the Council. They just can't get rid of me. And I'm also serving as one of the original members of the Oregon Governor's Coastal Salmon Restoration and Production Task Force. And the reason I mention to you this background is that during these 20-plus years, my experience in working with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has become allowed me to become well acquainted with this group of staff and the director from the director on down. The quality of their performance as a state agency is unquestionable, of the highest quality that I've observed. And I had a good chance while on the council to compare our department with the departments of Washington, California, and Idaho. And I can state to you categorically that none of the state's fish and game departments measure up to our own state of Oregon Department of Fish and Game and Wildlife. They're in their performance either in a qualitative sense or quantitative sense. With respect to the bills that support the department's budget, for which is the reason I'm here today to share with you my thoughts, my involvement with the department has gone through several budget hearing processes as in the past years, and I've witnessed the cuts to the department and the overall effects on the morale of the staff and the loss of key staff. And as a citizen of Oregon, I feel strongly that it is the responsibility of this committee and the legislature to provide solid support for their budget. Without that, we cannot have adequate management of our state's fish and wildlife resources. In addition, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has been thrust into a high-profile leadership role in the Northwest as a point agency for the Oregon Plan, which is to recover the Oregon coastal coho, and soon will be responsible for the management of the Willamette Plan, which will do the same for Willamette stocks. To allow a $10.5 million shortfall in their budget to occur is not, it makes virtually no sense at all to me. The result would at least short-circuit their ability to manage our resources and certainly could lead to the collapse of their ability to manage both these huge fishery management plans and to go forward with the other business at hand on a daily basis for the department. For me, a key issue as a participant in the recreational fishery, and I speak also for the rest of Oregon's recreational fishers because I provide a platform for them to fish on when we do have a salmon season, is the adequate funding of our state hatcheries. Without hatcheries providing harvestable number of salmon for fishermen, the fishermen disappear, their license revenue supporting the department disappears, and most importantly, the constituent base, which provides the fundamental public advocacy for our fisheries resources, also disappears. We've observed this trend over the past several years, which has exacerbated the funding shortfall for Oregon Fish and Wildlife. For these reasons and justifications that you have already heard and will hear more of today, I urge your support for the department's budget in both House Bill 2100 and House Bill 5023. And then that concludes my comments to you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Anderson, please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm a lobbyist. I represent the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla, but I'm also a lifelong hunter and fisher in this state. I've had combination license for over 50 years or since they've been available. And I want to make some observations. As many of you know, I served in the legislature from the late 1960s through the late 1970s. And I would tell you that for the 12 years I was in the legislature, this agency had no better friend in the legislature than I was. I chaired the interim committee in 1971-72 that rewrote the entire fish and wildlife codes of the state, and I co-sponsored the legislation that merged the old game and fish commissions into the agency they have today. And I can tell you that 20 years ago, this was a very popular and responsive agency. And I would like to make some comments because I think today it is not that. And although we've heard some glowing words, and I'm here to suggest you should pass the budget because there's little alternative. You're not going to have the Department of Human Resources run the fishing and hunting programs of the state of Oregon. But I think there's some things that ought to be done. We've got some crises, and you've dealt with them on this committee and on the committee that you serve on in the wee hours of the morning, some other parts of this week. This agency has an attitudinal problem that I think needs to be addressed, and I think Mr. Greer probably understands that. And that's an attitudinal problem that's similar to what you run into when you're dealing with the education community, and they say to you, I have a master's degree in education, and I know better than you what ought to be done. And there's too many instances in this state where landowners in eastern Oregon, ranchers who are on their property daily and know exactly what the situation is, will be confronted by a biologist that says, no, I've got a degree from Oregon State, and I know better than you do. And this goes through to people who have fished all our lives or been involved with this, fishing guides who are on the rivers every single day, but who get argued with by biologists somewhere. And that's an attitudinal problem that I think needs to be changed. Now, I want to talk about specifically a couple of things that I think are very important. And you've been dealing with fish restoration. And I have a real disagreement, and the tribe that I represent and the Confederated Tribes of Eastern Oregon, who are represented by the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, have a real problem with the wild fish policy that this agency pursues, which is only slightly less onerous than the NITS wild fish policy. And if it's pursued, it's going to lead to some drastic problems, and I think the tribes and the tribe I represent offer some realistic alternatives to that. Specifically, we have on the Naha, on the Grand Ram, and some of those tributaries, remnant runs of fish in the very small numbers. And if we rely strictly on a wild fish policy to restore those runs, we will be about that task for about 100 years. And I would suggest to you that trying to restore the runs with those remnant populations, you're going to have more pressure to remove dams and do the other things that politically I don't think are going to get done. You don't want them to happen. And I think it's unrealistic to think we're going to find a solution by taking dams down, which is a political problem that will take about 25 years to solve. Now, what the Indian tribes are suggesting is a supplemental fish policy, and so far they've run into a dead head-on collision with the agency when they talk about that. And the solution that's suggested is we will study it, one more year-long study. And I think the agency would be real bright if they decided that if you could encourage them through the budget to sit down with the several tribes who have years of experience, and I would challenge anybody that doubts that to visit the Grand Ron River the Umatilla River, and see what the tribes have done, the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla, in restoring what was totally a sterile river to anadromous fish runs that are repropagating themselves. The two things I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, this committee ought to do is, number one, put the tightest possible leash on the budget of the agency, make them report back to you or to the emergency board as regularly as possible with some kind of guidelines that they ought to meet, and hold back on part of the budget to do that. And secondly, I would suggest that a task force be put in existence similar to the one that Representative Jensen and I served on at the Oregon Department of Transportation, which was called the Efficiency Task Force, where there's a healthy membership of public members, non-involved public members who have an interest, have a knowledge. I'd start with the rancher from Baker County that was here. Someone like that has got obviously good common sense, and put them on a committee and make the committee chair. Now, legislators serve, and there was a number of legislators in this committee. They need to be legislators who are going to show up and be interested in the subject area and make sure that we get a broad perspective on it. I think you might find something that, number one, we would change the attitude in the agency, and we would build the kind of support they so desperately need in order to continue getting the kind of funding that they deserve. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Mr. Martin? Thank you. The testimony that we've been hearing from the tribal representatives has been most eloquent, and I think very valuable to not only this committee, but the standing committee as well.
I left a copy of Carla Hightower's testimony from a week ago Monday before your other committee, but several of you don't serve on the committee, and I challenge the agency to bring anybody more articulate, more knowledgeable than her before you to talk about this subject area.
Elkins, Mr. Sanderson?
Sanderson, yes, sir.
Sanderson, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I cannot speak more eloquently than the hunters have that appeared before you earlier today about the need for what we're going to talk about, and that's the fee increase House bill that's outlined in House Bill 2100. One of the goals of the Oregon Hunters Association is to help support and maintain healthy wildlife resources. And prior to the session beginning, we served on the budget committee that ODFW had put together. And we as an organization set two priorities that we would support the fee increase up to the levels that supported OSP game enforcement officers and ODFW field biologists and support staff, two partners that we feel help achieve the goal of supporting and maintaining healthy wildlife resources. I will not duplicate what has been said earlier today, Mr. Chair, other than to leave you with a quote that was given by Captain Lindsey Ball at a previous hearing earlier this session, where he says, and I quote, the Fish and Wildlife Division is doing a good job protecting Oregon's fishery resources. However, we have experienced a 32% increase of illegal killing of our black-tailed deer from 1997 to 1998. We have also observed a 33% increase of illegal killing of our Rocky Mountain elk. It is time that fish and wildlife enforcement is provided by the means to protect Oregon's wildlife resources. And we agree with that. We support Captain Ball, and we support the field biologists and ask for full funding for both. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
I was just here for a question.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. If I could have Michelle Etter and Ron Lathan available.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Michelle Longo Etter. I'm a fisherman's wife from Newport. My husband, Bob Etter, is a commercial fisherman and has been for over 25 years. We have two boats that we fish out of Newport. One's a 66-foot boat, and the other is a 40-foot boat. They are what are known as combination vessels. The fisheries that we participate in are Dungeness crab. Both boats fish for Dungeness crab. We also use pots to fish for sable fish, which is a bottom fish or a ground fish. We also fish for tuna. We have a trawl permit for pink shrimp, and we long line for halibut as well. Just to give you a sense of our operation, we have seven crew. Our annual payroll is in the range of approximately $300,000. So we have about seven full-time equivalents employment, and we provide with an general annual earnings between $40,000 to $50,000 for each of our crew members. My husband would be here today, but he is at sea, and I'll explain a little bit about what he's doing in a moment. But I want to tell you that he's long been active as a public member in helping the department with his voice in the management of Oregon's commercial fisheries. He has served as a member on the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission. He's also served as a member on the Tri-State Dungeness Crab Committee, which has looked at the possibility of Oregon, Washington, and California all managing the Dungeness crab resource. He's also served two terms as the pot gear representative to the Ground Fish Advisory Panel of the Pacific Fishery Management Council. I'm here today to testify in support of every single dollar that you can find for our marine fish program for the department. It's, as you have heard, there are salmon is not the only fishery that is in need of research dollars. Our ground fish resource off the West Coast, our crab resource, our pink shrimp resource, all of these resources are, as of course you understand, are deserving of attention and of adequate funding. We're really concerned about the funds specifically for the marine fish program. Not only would we like you to support the $528,000 that the governor has requested, we'd like you to add back in additional funds to take it to approximately $1.15 million in funding, specifically to support a number of the positions that were requested by the department in their original marine resources program. We need additional funding to be able to reorganize the marine program and enhance the services. We need additional funding for nearshore and developmental fisheries, which are the future of Oregon's management of new fisheries in Oregon. We also participate in those developmental fisheries as well. And we also need, in particular, additional dollars in commercial fisheries, both the monitoring and the research of those programs. The reason my husband is not here today is because he is participating with one of our vessels. He is skippering with several biologists from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Department to do a research survey in regard to sablefish. There are two vessels, a pot vessel, which is ours, and a long-line vessel that are chartered to go out and obtain information about sablefish, one of these stocks that's managed by the federal government, but with which Oregon has taken the lead to provide information that will benefit this resource on the West Coast. We have found, as an industry, contrary to some of the testimony that you've heard today, that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has been very open in, first of all, cooperative research with fishermen. We have an excellent relationship with ODF&W as an agency, from the highest levels of staff to the field biologists to the people who issue the licenses. We have found them to work extremely well with commercial fishermen. And contrary to other testimony that you've heard today, we've been treated respectfully. My husband's expertise in the field in which he is a professional has been respected, has been listened to a person at the department level. And so we, frankly, we have our experience is not an isolated one. They work well with commercial fishing interests up and down the coast. That's not to say we haven't had our brouhahas on occasion. We've sent our own burning letters off at times. But to a person, we have found the staff to be professional and to be open to using cost-effective resources, i.e. the specific knowledge of commercial fishermen, to incorporate their ideas, their knowledge, into the programs that they devise for the effective management of Oregon and federal fisheries. So with that, if there's any questions, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer them, but we urge you to find every dollar that you can for the marine fish programs and for the department budget as a whole. One last comment. We strongly support all funding for enforcement with the Oregon State Police. Oregon has, again, taken a quality leadership role at both the state and the federal level to protect and preserve our public's marine resources, and they do a very fine job. Thank you, sir.
Question for Ms. Detta? Mr. Leffen?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ron Lapine, and I represent the Oregon Coast Charter Boat Association on the Pacific Fish Management Council and the Salmon Advisory Subpanel area, have for the past 11 years. And I'm here as a hobby. I run a charter boat. I'm retired, and I run a charter boat to service the sports fisherman who cannot afford his own boat to go out and fish in the ocean for salmon, and who's intelligent enough to get on one that's been certified by the Coast Guard and is a safe vessel. I'm in strong support of the ODF&W's budget that they put in for the part about the breakdown on the funding that's needed to fill the gap in the shortfall. I have a special interest, particularly in the hatchery program that deals with the fish propagation, the fish natural production part of it. There's a decrease in the fish propagation part of over $4 million in the budget. And for the last 5 years in the Central Oregon coast, from Cannon Beach, basically, clear to the California border, there's been no coho fishing for the recreational sports fishermen at all. This year, through a lot of hard work, we were able to get 15,000 coho that is put into a selective fishery in that area. And that means that those fish are marked fish from the hatcheries that the people are able to fish on, the sportsmen. You're asking the sportsmen to increase his license fee to be able to fish on those fish, and then you take away the hatchery production and reduce it down and put more money towards the natural production, which may take 20, 30 years to get back to an area where the sports fishermen can fish again. And I would think that you would want to at least keep the budget the same in the fish propagation department of it, or increase it so that there'd be an opportunity for people to fish on salmon in the ocean under the special selected fishery program. Last year out of the Columbia River, we had just 7,000 fish, and they predicted 50% of those would be marked, and it came in at 50%, and it was quite effective for the sportsmen to be able to fish there. This year, the projection is for 80% of the salmon in the area to be marked hatchery fish. And that'll provide a lot of opportunity for people to fish on salmon in the ocean that has been lacking for many, many years. And it's not in conflict with the Oregon Salmon Plan at all. And I think that more attention needs to be paid towards keeping that hatchery program and the marked fish program so that we can have a meaningful recreational fishing out in the ocean. And the part about the general fund increase to make up that shortfall, our fishing game is not a gamble. It's a heritage that we have, and if people that want to gamble, they need a sure thing. They ought to bet on the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department. And I would say that more lottery funds should come towards the Fish and Wildlife Department than what's been earmarked for it or what could be possibly put. So thank you very much for letting me testify, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Jim Myron, representing Oregon Trout. Let me just briefly summarize my written comments. We believe that since the agency's principal mission is the protection and restoration of native species, that the budget priorities should be set by this mission. And we would suggest a number of areas where that should receive this priority treatment. Oregon Plan implementation activities would certainly be a priority, and within that, the natural production program within the agency. There are a number of program option packages that have been presented to you in the governor's proposed budget relative to the natural production program. We would support those as priorities. Fish and wildlife enforcement, as you've heard from a number of commenters, is a high priority. Also, the research program within ODFW is another area that we believe should have some additional funds targeted for various actions. The fish propagation program is another one that, and it might surprise you, but I'm not going to call for the closure of hatcheries. What I'm going to call for is that you take a close look at what the IMST, the Independent Science Team, recommended in their December report as a basis for reconfiguring some of these hatcheries to serve as research facilities to figure out how we can use hatcheries more appropriately to rebuild naturally spawning wild populations. So we would suggest that some effort in that area be made. And finally, we do support also the idea that more general fund dollars should go into the department. We differ from a few people we would suggest that you target the general fund dollars to programs that benefit the general public at large and save the angler $100 for programs that benefit hunters and anglers directly. We'd make that differentiation. So thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Can we hear from Mr. Taylor?
Yes, my name is Bruce Taylor. I'm the executive director for the Oregon Wetlands Joint Venture. Chairman Ferrioli, members of the committee, I want to tell you about some of the good things the Department of Fish and Wildlife has been doing, the kind of things that you don't normally hear about, perhaps. The Oregon Wetlands Joint Venture is a coalition of private groups and state and federal agencies involved in partnership efforts to conserve wetlands through cooperative and voluntary action. Our steering committee is made up of representatives of the joint venture's private partners, groups like Ducks Unlimited, Defenders of Wildlife, the Nature Conservancy, the Oregon Duck Hunters Association, Audubon, Oregon Land Trust. Our cooperators include virtually all of the state and federal agencies involved in wetlands issues. Over the past 8 years, the joint venture partners have helped protect or improve thousands of acres of habitat for fish and wildlife. This hasn't attracted a whole lot of a notice among legislators or perhaps others, for that matter. The joint venture isn't controversial. It's not broken. The wheels aren't squeaking. We don't get a lot of attention. But the principles that guide our work have been so widely endorsed in recent years that I think many people perceive them as cliches, cooperative, voluntary, non-regulatory, partnerships, things like that. For the joint venture partners, these aren't just buzzwords. These are a way of doing business. Our business is habitat conservation. Working together, we've managed to protect or improve more than 60,000 acres of some of the most important habitats in Oregon. Habitats for salmon and steelhead, ducks and shorebirds, dozens of other species that depend on wetlands. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has played a major role in these efforts. Some of our biggest wetland restoration projects are on the Department of Fish and Wildlife's state wildlife areas. Through its active pursuit of joint venture partnerships, the department has generated more than $1 million in federal and private funding for habitat improvements at the Savi Island, Fern Ridge, and Ladd Marsh wildlife areas. Largely through the department's initiative, this is largely other people's money paying for things on state wildlife areas. But some of the best projects that the joint venture's been doing with the Department of Fish and Wildlife are on private lands down in Polk County, where ODFW and other joint venture partners helped a grassy grower restore 300 acres of some of the most productive wetlands you'll find anywhere in the Willamette Valley. Down in Coos County, where the department worked with Roseburg Forest Parks to restore more than 100 acres of freshwater marsh habitat for juvenile salmon. And over in Crook County, where ODFW has been working with a rancher for some years now to restore more than 1,200 acres of wetlands, produces an abundant crop of hay for him out of a piece of ground that wasn't very productive in the past and provides a lot of habitat for migratory birds. With help from some of our other partners, the Department of Fish and Wildlife publishes our newsletter. I included a copy in your packet there. Which we send to about 15,000 people around the state trying to preach the message of cooperation and voluntary action, good ways to do conservation. It's also a great source of leads for new projects. I get a lot of calls from landowners who say, I want to do something good for my wetlands. What can I do? I usually call an ODFW biologist, and that's primarily because they have a good track record of working well with private landowners, of asking the landowner, well, what do you want to get out of this? That's usually the starting point. It's not what you should do, it's what do you want it to be. And my experiences with them is that ODFW biologists have been among the best ones at actually going out there, talking to landowners, and then following up with and putting together partnerships that lead to projects on the ground. A lot of these good things that ODFW has been able to do for the joint venture in jeopardy as a result of the budget shortfall, which you're all very familiar with. You also have heard a lot about the department's problems. Cutting the budget is not going to solve any of those problems. It will jeopardize some of the department's successes, the kind of things that I've had a lot of experience with, the partnerships that are really key to any kind of non-regulatory conservation strategy, and the kind of partnerships that allow the Department of Fish and Wildlife to really leverage what its minimal dollars it has to work with. So we hope you will support full funding for the governor's budget request, particularly the license fee increases and the general fund support. Thank you very much.
Questions? Seeing none, can we have forward, thank you very much for your testimony, sir. Can we have forward Jerry Myra and Rod Harder?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Rod Harder, Executive Director of Oregon Sportsman Defense Fund, a coalition of about 40 outdoor groups across the state of Oregon. Here today to talk to discuss the budget. We fully support the use of general funds to cover some of the shortfall that has taken place within the agency. based that on, as an example, the Wildlife Integrity Fund, the Wildlife Integrity Rules now cover hundreds, if not thousands, of non-game, non-huntable animals. The cost of administering that program comes out of wildlife dollars on many occasions. The Bear and Cougar issue, we are spending a lot of fish and wildlife money and hunter license money in controlling bears and cougars because we now are facing the situation that the public put us in. We cannot use dogs any longer to control those populations. They are expanding. They're causing problems. Public caused the problem. The public should be willing to pay for it. Those kinds of the Endangered Species Act, the Oregon Endangered Species Act, again, is a non-game program, and it is the agency spends considerable dollars on that program. Those money should be covered by general fund monies. The list can go on, and I think they've been covered a number of times today, and the areas have been covered. We, two of the things that I am here in full support of, one and first, and as all of you know, I have been working very hard to try to restore the Oregon State Police game detail to its former levels, to the point that I was asked by a couple of legislators when I had gone to work for Oregon State Police, which isn't going to happen. Hal Elkins put on the record what has happened with regards to compliance rates. They have gone down considerably. That's a very big concern to us. Each time an animal is stolen by poaching, that's one less opportunity for the people I represent. We have to fix that, and we have to do it soon. We fully support funding to put those people back where they belong, at a level where they can function. Of course, I don't think that has been touched on today, but another plus for that is we don't want the NIMS folks in here doing what our state people can do. And that, I think, is a very, very basic reason that we should fund them fully. Nothing that the feds can do that we can't do better. And that's going to come back to bite me in about an hour when we talk about the gun regulations. We would also support the on-the-ground biologists, full funding of those groups. They are the people that interact with landowners, they're the people that are out there in the field to talk to my hunters when they're out in the field. And I would suggest that it might be very necessary in the form of a budget note or a special line item to make sure that those groups, when they are funded, don't have the money spent on something a little more inventive. And one of the packages I handed to you was a teaming with wildlife package, and I bring this up because of some inventive financing that's going on, taking place in the agency. Teaming with wildlife is an excise tax proposed at the federal level a couple of years ago on outdoor equipment. And our agency hired a lobbyist to lobby for that. They sent their staff all over the state talking to our congressional delegation and others, well documented, Senator. I think it's an inappropriate expenditure of taxpayer funds in whatever form they take, hunting licenses. I've been assured no hunting license money was spent, to lobby for a federal excise tax. I would fully support the comments of my colleague Roger Martin with regards to some of the attitude problems within the agency. I would say that Director Greer has taken a very positive approach on that. He has been the most aggressive director we've had in my memory, and getting those kind of problems straightened out. But I would bring to your attention the second packet that I handed to you with regards to the most recent criminal investigation that took place in Portland with regards to the preference point. Director Greer has told me he is aggressively pursuing that with an internal investigation. But those are the kinds of things that I believe an oversight committee, such as proposed in Senate Bill 778, would go a long ways towards correcting, and we would fully support Representative Messley's amendments to that particular bill. With that, I'll close my testimony and answer any questions if I could.
Panel, if we can hold our questions. Mr. Meyer, have a chance. Mr. Meyer, you're up.
Chairman Ferrioli, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Meyer. It's hard to follow an act like that. I belong to about four different sporting organizations around the state, and I do volunteer work for ODFW out at Silver's Island, making wood duck boxes, cleaning duck boxes, and building deer fence and that, and working in the fundraisers. But anyway, today I'm here to represent Oregon United Sporting Dogs Association. Regrettably, OUSDA will have to oppose the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife tag fee increase package. We're opposed to this here increase in the license fee for the hunter, but we support the money coming out of the general fund. Throughout the years, OUSDA has been supported and involved with ODFW and its policies. However, during the last session of the legislature, ODFW has testified against several bills in both the Senate and the House that we felt were critical to long-term sound wildlife management. It does not seem that our desires for the future of Oregon's wildlife and ODFW should be that different. I believe some of ODFW's budget shortfalls is due to things that they have no control over, similar to what Rod Harder had to say there, but I also believe that they have brought many of their current problems on themselves, similar to what he had to say. It is not right to expect sportsmen to support this request for an expanded budget if it is to be used to continue business as usual. We support the idea of using hunting and fishing tags. We oppose the idea of using hunting and fishing tag revenue to support our agencies whose direction is being sent by National Marine Fisheries, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and even the governor. While a paying customer, the sportsman is either ignored or outright opposed. Many times, ODFW representatives have made statements to the effect, if our decisions make everyone mad, it must be a good compromise. Our Oregon's wildlife resources deserve better than this kind of compromise. And I guess part of the examples I might use on ODFW hiring the public relations people to promote the department rather than sportsmen and sound wildlife management. And one we strongly oppose is when they oppose the bill, House Bill 2874, that would have used volunteers to control bear and cougar numbers in areas in the states where deer and elk numbers are suffering. Then amended the bill to promote paid people, including agents of the federal government, to do the same thing that we volunteered to do. And as Vice President of the Pioneer Chapter of OHA, I have been contacted by members expressing their concern over the credibility of this department. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your testimony today. We're at the limit of our time for the room, but what I'm going to do is call the last six witnesses as two panels, and although their testimony is very disparate, we'll ask them just to summarize. So I'll call Ken Evans, Anna Husing, and Chuck Woolsey.
All right. For the record, my name is John Gervais, representing Diamond Mick Resort, Chair Ferrero, and members of the committee. The reason I'm here today is to talk with you about decision package number 203 in the governor's proposed budget. And I have handed out testimony that was used in passage of House Bill 2536 and is coming to the floor of the Senate momentarily. Diamond Lake Resort has been hit by, as many of you know, the Tule Chub, and it's wiped out the rainbow trout in the lake, and the job base has dropped dramatically. The estimates on the impact of Diamond Lake Resort are between $10 and $15 million a year between the four chambers of the area, and then Funnel Falls, Roseburg, and Medford, that asked for the introduction of House Bill 2536. Diamond Lake normally has a employee level of about 140 full-time people. That has dropped off. I testified on the speed limit change to Diamond Lake Resort by 40. It's actually dropped by another 25 now. Part of that is due to the weather and the heavier amount of snow, but it's going down. Decision package number 203 would provide $940,000 for the purchase of Road Known and be matched with the already available $1.6 million federal money for that project. It's a very important project. The bill that passed in the House was to change the speed limit to try to stop some of the bleeding of Diamond Lake Resort and help it survive. In negotiations with the governor and the governor's staff, we agreed to put in a provision that if the 1999 legislature passes the decision package 203, that the speed limit will not be increased and we'll try to maintain the family resort type activity. But this relates directly to about 60 jobs. Diamond Lake Resort was the number one trout fishing lake in the state of Oregon. It is also a big impact in terms of visitor days, 1.2 million visitor days. The fishing days were 100,000 fishing days, now they're down to 30,000. The Forest Service activity in their parks and campgrounds around the lake has reduced by 33%. Diamond Lake's income has reduced by 38%, and their job base is in jeopardy. We also would note that 75% of the income comes from basically about 3 months in the summer season from the basically the recreation fishing, and about 65% of those people are from out of state, and this was the number one slate for the purchase of short-term fishing licenses in the state of Oregon. Yes.
This House Bill 2536 has passed the House.
Yes, 59 to nothing, and it's going to the floor of the Senate now, having come unanimously out of the Senate Transportation Committee.
Is it scheduled for today?
I don't know. I didn't look.
I was just going to suggest to other issues, because this House bill passed the Senate, and it's coming to the House. We have passed the House, headed to the Senate. We have three members here that will be, I'm sure, intensely interested in this bill when it's scheduled for our hearing. But let's move to the other members that have...
Okay, I was going to say the two aren't together.
Okay.
I'm basically done, but the House bill raises the speed limit as well.
The House bill is about the speed limit, but the other issue is restoring the fishing opportunities in Diamond.
Uh-huh.
The premier trout fishing lake in the state of Oregon through about
1993.
Okay. Do you have something that you'd like to add to the record on this issue?
This is Ken Evans with the Fisheries Restoration Enhancement Coalition, and recently working on this particular issue with respect to Diamond Lake. I have fished it since the early 60s, and yes, up until probably the late 80s was the premier trout fishing lake in the state. It is kind of a perception to that when we can't even hold on to what is the gem of the summer, the lakes and in eastern Oregon for trout fishing, that it kind of doesn't bode well for the rest of the trout lakes and for fisheries in general for the state. And I guess this just reflects on our efforts. So I'd like to see, I would support and we would support the package, decision package 203 as well.
If option package 203, what are the four steps we need to take to implement this change?
The four steps to take the change?
Yeah, what do we need to do in Diamond Lake to restore that fishery?
First of all, you need to pass the money.
Okay.
Purchase the road known.
Okay.
Draw the lake down.
Right.
Poison the fish.
Right.
And then restock it.
Okay, so it's five things. And that's essentially what's in the program option package.
Which the federal government has already budgeted $1.6 million for.
Okay, and we will be hearing about this option package in the budget hearings that we're continuing this week, so I would invite your testimony back to the subcommittee so that we could hear more about this.
All right.
In the meantime, let's...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chairman Ferrelli, and members of the Ways and Means Subcommittee. I'm Chuck Woosley of Corvallis, Oregon. And to shorten things up from my written testimony, I'll just try to brief it. Anyway, I thank you for this opportunity. I represent the Oregon Division of the Isaac Walton League of America. There's about 600 of us in Oregon. Many of us volunteer quite a large number of hours for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Throughout our volunteer duties and other contacts with the department and following their programs, we observe a great need for expansion of programs, again, especially since the shortfalls have come in the last few years. And this goes also for the Oregon State Police programs. We feel that further reduction there is absolutely unacceptable. We also feel that there's a justification of the $404 million that the department and governor are asking for, and we support that because all Oregonians gain from all fish and wildlife, and yet not all Oregonians support it in a fair share way, because also of the threatened and endangered species, and then also the increased problems that we're having with bear and cougar, and that was primarily because of the voters' reaction. So let's let some more of the voters help pay for the dealing with those problems. Okay, the League a year ago passed a resolution to fully support the fee increases, and we feel that the fee increases in House Bill 2100 are moderate increases, and we support substantial increases, so we do support that. We also support a shellfish license, and we're considering that in House Bill 2373, which has now been engrossed. Great. Earlier in the legislative session, anyway, there was some talk about reducing those proposed fee increases by however much money would come from Measure 66. We are opposed to any reduction there. We'd like the full funding from all possible sources. Now, whether it's lottery funds or fee increases. And in studying the governor's budget, we feel that it is a bare bones budget. So again, we encourage the preparation of every, or the appropriation of all of the money that we can. And this goes for Oregon State Police as well as ODF&W. If we're going to manage our fisheries and wildlife for the future generations, and we do have a responsibility for that, we need to appropriate just all that we can. And again, thank you for this opportunity. And if you have questions, I'll try to answer.
Any questions for the panel? Mr. Husing?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ono Husing, the director of the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association, I'd like, with your permission, Mr. Chair, to submit a letter from Salmon for All, Steve Fick from Astoria. It's a group that represents commercial fishing. Incidentally, Terry, the reason he's not here today is that his processing outfit is taking a big load of shrimp right now. So someone's catching shrimp out there, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, you want to see the boat run now?
I shouldn't have rubbed it in, I guess, but you're here and somebody else is catching shrimp out there. Mr. Chairman, again, members of the committee, I'm here to support the fee increase, here to support the general fund contribution. Fisheries and wildlife, as you've heard from countless numbers of people, are exceptionally important for Oregon, rural Oregon, coastal Oregon. I do hope in the future, though, we don't try to keep funding ODF&W on increases of fees. There's definitely a point where there's a breaking point where I think the issue we heard from John Pung from Lincoln City or Lincoln County earlier about the affordability for some people is an issue. So while some of us can afford the increased fees, there's got to be a limit out there where maybe we can have some kind of means-tested fee program. I don't know. That's something down the road. But I do want to point out one or two things. At OCZMA, we have a very good working relationship with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We partner with them on a number of things, the Developmental Fisheries Program, working with the Oregon salmon industry, working with the commercial fishing industry. We also do work with the Economic Development Department to try to do the basic background information on the economics of the fisheries. And I got to tell you that I get outstanding cooperation from the people in the department when we try to interact with the fishing industry and do these economic studies. They're exceptionally open. They never try to hide the ball on us. I find them to be very candid, very helpful. And this is from someone who has to deal with them on a regular basis in terms of co-administering some of these outreach functions. So I can tell you that they're good to work with. I think the morale has increased tremendously in the last year or two. And I think they've gone through a real funnel of, you know, trying to figure out where they're going from a strategic planning point of view. I hope they've turned the corner on that. I testified once in the SR2 committee on some of the good work that some of the ODF&W employees are doing on fish supplementation. Obviously, this is not a place to talk about hatcheries and stuff, but I do want to point out that the Coastal Salmon Restoration Production Task Force that you heard about earlier today, Frank Warren's a member of that. We do have our letter out, Mr. Chair. It's not a draft anymore. It's an actual letter. I think it's circulated and out there. First finding is got to fund ODF&W. We don't do that, then the ability to change the agency to do things we want it to do just isn't there. And I frankly trust Director Greer. I think he's the man for the job right now. This is a terribly tough time to handle the changes in fish and wildlife. We're urbanizing as a state. We've got all these new challenges. I think he's the man for the job, and I think he's got to have the tools and the finances to get us there. I'm going to cut it off there with one little answer Representative Thompson's question earlier, though, about the whiting industry. And that's on its way to being a $100 million fishery in the state of Oregon, Terry. So, and that, by the way, didn't happen without state involvement from both ODF&W and the Economic Development Department. EDD put in about $100,000 support through OCZMA partnered with some industry money, and that got us to the point where we could overcome some of the National Fisheries Service objections about whether we could do shoreside allocations. So it was an example of the state partnering with the industry, creating and creating essentially out of a small amount of money, a lot of work, but now we're on our way to a $100 million industry per year and personal income. So it's just one example of what happens when we do work constructively together. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any questions for the panel? Seeing none, I'm going to make one brief comment since I'm here. You've got a $100 million industry sitting down there. What's the value of the salmon industry now?
Well, I don't have that number off the top of my head, but remember that pie chart I shared with you, and it essentially, you know, salmon has now 3 or 4% of the total value landed in the state of Oregon in terms of commercial fisheries. So on a pie chart, it's barely discernible. And I'll be happy to share that the latest pie chart with you, but it's
I think it's down to where it's like 10 million or something like that. You got a $100 million industry still underfished, and we're shifting all the money away from that $100 million industry. I think it's a mistake.
And Terry was out of the room when Michelle Longo-Edder said, if you don't like ODF&W, or she mentioned, and Frank Warren said the same thing, look to the south, look to the north. If you don't like ODF&W, try the neighboring fish and wildlife departments in the other states and tell me that they don't do a pretty darn good job getting the challenges. And if we had them instead of NIMS running the show, we'd be a lot better off as well, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I'd like to call on Mr. Lee Martin, Jan Wellhauser, and Dwayne Meissner.
Chair Ferraioli and members of the committee, my name's Lee Martin. I'm a rancher at Camp Oregon. I'm here late today because I had another meeting, plus the freeway got closed out, so I came via Lincoln and Dayton, which is a new way to get to Salem for me. I'm just not going to repeat on things other people have said. I'm fully in support of the fish and wildlife. I have a small ranch in central Oregon. I support a lot of wildlife on it. Fortunately, the government pays me to do that through CRP, and then I sell the hunting to the people from Portland. So it's not a bad deal. The things that haven't been brought up that are concerning me is just a couple of minor things. One, they need the money because if you cut the budget, you usually don't cut at the top, and the people who get cut are the people that I see.
and some of those people who are very important to me are the state police. We don't have regular patrols through our county on the back roads. The only state police I see are the Fish and Wildlife State Police. And secondly, the CRP and the watershed councils in our county are really important on the stream rehabilitation for the John Day and Deschutes drainages. And we get a lot of help from the Fish and Wildlife personnel in that aspect. So I think it's real important that we maintain the budget. I don't think the fee increase is real important since I just put in today for my Pioneer license. Maybe I'm a little prejudiced on that, but it isn't much, the fee increase. What is it? The paper said the average Oregonian spends $200 a year on gambling. It doesn't seem out of line at all. So thank you for your time. I appreciate the opportunity to speak.
My name is Jan Wellhauser. I manage campgrounds on the Sweet Home Ranger District, 5 of them, and there's also an Oregon State campground there, and Camp Attitude is a camp being built for handicapped kids. Anyway, they're all located on the upper South San Am River. The South San Am River is not having fish stocked in it anymore because of the new fish and game regulations. I have spoken at several meetings in 1998 and 1999 trying to get fish returned to the river. There are no fish in there at all. But anyway, my first issue about this is the fish and game wants to stock the reservoirs and have people become lake and reservoir fishermen. If you can see the fish pattern. And no question. Anyway, that's where they would like us to fish in our area. This is in Linn County, I love Sweet Home. Anyway, in 1992, 93, and 97, they built three handicapped, I'll send this to, fishing platforms. That cost $90,000. Anyway, that's not what bothers me, money spent. It's the fact that there aren't any hatchery trout present, so people are not catching any fish. Handicapped people become rather, they have a disability to start with, and they become rather more depressed and more frustrated. In 97, I had an open house at Yucklaw Campground and had 175 disabled people, mentally, physically, blind, and you name it. And here's a picture of that real quick. Of the people celebrating. Anyway, I helped the blind girl catch her first fish that she'd ever caught off the Yucklaw fishing platform, and I tell you, that was a tearjerker. Anyway, you say, well, why are you so interested? Well, I was a school teacher, and I love people. I'm not making a great deal of money out of these campgrounds. I charge $8 a night. Anyway, in 1997, I had 7,805 people camping in my campground. According to my recreational survey that I did, I had 2,688 people fishing. In 1998, 500 or so less, 7,520, or 300 less, excuse me, of which only 475 people even attempted to fish after discovering that there were no fish in the river. The new fishing regulations do not offer anything to small children. Have you ever tried to teach a child to fly fish or... Here's two boys that fished 2 hours at Trout Creek. They were walking down the road with their chins down. They said, what's wrong, boys? They said, well, we fished, and we never caught a thing. And he had a stick on his one pole, and the other kid had one of those little drink cups hanging from his. So I followed them to their camp and visited with their parents, and they were very frustrated. And I said, would you mind if I take a photograph of your boys? They're smiling in that photograph, but when I met them, they were not smiling. They were smiling because I told them I was going to take that picture and show it to somebody special like you folks. Anyway, so the fishing regulations also, in this year, there's no bait fishing, so it's catch and release, spinner and fly fishing. First of all, you can't get any action out of that river at all. There's nothing in that river that people can catch or see or anything except for hours and look and not see a thing. Anyway, so I would like to see the hatchery trout return. And I would also like to see that children that are younger than age 14 be allowed to fish with eggs or worms because they cannot possibly fly fish. I had a difficult time when I was about 16 or 17. My dad on the Mentoli is trying to teach me how to fly fish. And I certainly know that small children can't. And I used to lose more of my dad's lures, and on a river, you really lose artificial lures because you hang up on the rocks. Anyway, I'll move on real quick. Anyway, when you consider the Metro DFW.
If you could give us the...
The highlights. Okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
Take a breath.
Okay.
You've got...
A lot of
four them. Recommendations on what ODFW should do. Could I just have you summarize those four recommendations?
Well, okay, these are four possible things that they could do. I've talked to these folks before, and I've been my head against the wall with them. I will be in their hip pocket for the rest of my life. I'm a friendly enemy. I'm not an angry enemy with ODFW. David Anderson at the regional office is a wonderful man.
You lose this room in about 4 minutes.
Okay. Anyway, but I want steelhead, I want stock trout back in the river because there's nothing there to catch. Another possibility is to getting the Army Corps of Engineers. They promised people recreational opportunities in 1966 when they put in that dam. Well, there is recreational activities, but it's in the, right there in the reservoir. It's not up the river where it used to be. I thought maybe we might approach DeFazio to see if he can get us some money. I perhaps have underestimated my idea of a fish bypass. I measured it. It's 2.2 miles long to the reservoir from the mainstream river, and then you have a step-down ladder of 5/10 of a mile. I talked to some concrete people and locals, and, of course, this is how I came up with my figures. It's probably going to cost $6 million. But eliminate the studies, the feasibility studies, take an adapted plan and work it, make it work, and don't spend $6 million on a study like DeFazio gave the Cougar and Blue Reservoir project. Another possibility, these campgrounds are 8 miles above where they stock at Canyon Creek and Moose Creek. Drop one of these cable netting nets. Put your hatchery trout above. At a certain time of year when you need those natives to spawn, lift it up. All of the stockfish, I guarantee you, will be gone. If they're not, I'll get a skin diver in there, and we'll make sure that they can shoot over to the last fish is caught. Anyway, I thank you for listening. People of Oregon that talk to me, they are very concerned that there aren't any fish up there. I'm concerned, like I said, the money really doesn't matter that much to me. It's the people that matter to me. I have to tell them every day what the regulations are and what's happening. And they said, no fish. I thought you were going to get us some fish. I said, I'm still trying. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Allhauser. Mr. Martin. Oh, my turn. Sorry, Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chairman, good evening, members. I promise to be very brief. First of all, I'm here to get my report to the proposed increase of the fish and wildlife. And my main fear is that there will be a reduction of staff. I'm a member of the captain of the watershed council, and we're a very diverse group. We have an individual industry and also mining interests and also some of the
the expertise that the Oregon Fish and Wildlife people can give us. At the present time, they're just a phone call away. I've built forums on a Saturday morning with one of the fish biologists for a fish trap. We have a very, very good relationship with them, and we certainly do not want to lose that. As far as the watershed groups are concerned, our little group at Scappoose has approximately $100,000 in grants at the present time. A lot of money is coming down the pipe. And we as watershed members want to make sure that we are good stewards of the taxpayers' money. And we are going to have this the knowledge of the fish biologist in the future so that money is not spent the way it should not be spent. Just two other brief things that that have not been mentioned. Since I was a biology teacher for 30 years, a lot of the material, much of the material that I used, important material, was actually from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Also, I have students' job shadow. So the reason I bring that up is because the agency is not just for fishing and also for hunting, but it is actually a very important educational component. And the last thing is. The magazine that the department just brought out, and that deals with the, which is referred to as Oregon Wildlife, and this is long overdue. I don't know how many times I've gone to Montana, Wyoming, and have gone out of my way in order to camp an extra day or spend some extra time because of what I've read in their Department of Wildlife magazines. And I think this would be, if the department has proper funding, if we could have a magazine like the Wyoming Wildlife magazine, I think this would be a magnet for tourism. I think it would be more than paying for itself. So just to finish up, just as a former educator, I'm well aware of the charge of tax dollars, but the activities of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife are very important to many of our residents. The employees at the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife are truly guardians of our wildlife heritage, and as such, they do deserve a full support, and I certainly thank you for staying past the allotted time. Thank you very much.
Any questions for this? I'd like to thank the members of the panel. We've heard from 37 witnesses in just a little over three hours and a half. We're going to be closing the public hearing, and many of you know we're going into a public works session on House Bill 3225 2 minutes ago. So with that, we'll close this hearing, take a break, grab a cup of coffee, and get back to your chairs before they cool off. Thank you, committee. We are closed.
Dad.
Yeah, that's the number of people here, and that's the vote.
Yeah,
that's
how much of our budget was there. I'm going to